This is the Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca.
And welcome to the Big Show on TSN 1290 at TSN1290.ca. It is a Thursday, and many of the Jets fans wondering if the sun will come out today. We will find out as we delve into the Jets. 7-2 loss to the Toronto Maple Leafs last night to kick off the season. Lots to get to on that, and of course, lots to get to and everything else. We will have an hour of your phone calls. I'm sure a lot of people listening have opinions on that as well. We'll delve into it extensively around the NHL as well. Some exciting games to kick off the season. The Stanley Cup champions raised the banner at home and then dropped an OT. Connor McDavid was flying last night in Edmonton. We'll get into that as well. Winnipeg Blue Bombers continue preparations for the upcoming game with the Hamilton Tiger Cats Thursday at Investors Group Field. And we'll be all over that as well. Major League Baseball Divisional Series are set. The Colorado Rockies are out as the Arizona Diamondbacks manage to beat the Colorado Rockies and move on. They'll face the Dodgers. We'll get our picks on that. There's a game today. American League Series start. Yankees and Cleveland. And, of course, Houston and Boston. There's every series going tomorrow. We'll delve into that as well. Cam Newton in some hot water. We'll get into that with the Carolina Panthers quarterback. Jeff Reinbold's going to join us to set up Week 5. Week 5 of the NFL starts tonight. We have the game for you right here on TSN 1290. And Josh Morrissey, defenseman of the Winnipeg Jets, is going to join us as well. Brian Munns. And, of course, as we said, an hour of your phone calls, NHL news and notes. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brendan Rewicki is going to join us shortly. I thought we would delve into this extensively. Yeah, and I agree with you. I thought, you know what it stuck out to me is this team's MO of being very good, getting a lot of opportunities, doing a lot of things well. You don't capitalize, you don't get that goal, and when you're scored upon, the deflation that comes in. Yep. I thought they looked really good the first 10 to 15 minutes. Agreed. I thought the power play looked really good the first 10 to 15 minutes. The first three of them, I thought Frederik Andersen was playing unreal, but I thought if the Jets keep this up, they're going to get a few. This is, you know, a great start. And then Jacob Trouba, as Paul Maurice said in his post-game press conference, takes a dumb penalty.
Real dumb.
And then they get scored on. And from there, he said it snowballed. And we'll get into the coach's comments and everything else as well. But of all the things that we were all hearing about on Twitter and on the post-game show here on TSN 1290 last night and everything else, the one thing that's and all the comments were, here we go again, same issues, penalty kill, power play, defensive zone coverage, even goaltending was brought up. All those familiar things, the thing that stuck out to me the most is the whole all over somebody, can't capitalize, when it goes in your own net, just deflation. And it's a different game. I was talking with some people after the game last night, and I said, if they get one or two of those power play goals in the first period, it's a different game than what we saw. And the game changed when they took a penalty, got scored on. That was very familiar, the deflation of the team. And the direction, how things started getting individual after that, the first 10 to 12 minutes, what we saw, sort of went away from them, just snowballed.
But I can't give them a free pass for it. You know, like, sure, things get deflated and all the rest of it, but the level of defensive breakdown was revolting, more or less. You know, that especially that first goal for Kadri just to stroll in through the paint like that, and to take, I think it was three shots, it might have been four, but his first save was brilliant, and he just gets zero support on that. And the second goal, with Morrissey being as slow as he was, and pro some combination of those two guys to move towards JVR, it was just off that draw. It was just unbelievable. And the whole, the third goal with, it looks like it's Perreault. It looks like they're in man buffs on man and chasing. And that gets misinterpreted often. And then Perreault's, and I don't know if Enstrom not saying anything to Perreault. Perreault's unaware of somebody's back door, but a back door tap in. Again, we see it's just, it was nonstop concern like that. And so I just, yeah, sure, the Jets came out and looked fine and dandy, but they didn't look, they didn't, you know, they're dominating shots early on with Toronto and had four, you know, power play opportunities. I made a note here in the second period that if the game ends right now, you know, 12 minutes left in the second period, they're down 3-0. They've had some bad defensive breakdowns. They're 0-5 on the power play and 0-1 on the PK, which embodies everything that people are saying has to be dramatically better this year for them to have a chance. So it was more or less the worst start possible. And now you go into a situation where you stroll into Calgary and Edmonton, for Pete's sake. So, boy, the boys better wake up in a hurry.
Yeah, it's and as we said, we're going to open the Boss Pizza fan line at 9 o'clock for a full hour of your calls and comments and the defensive zone coverage. I hung around to hear Paul Maurice's post-game press conference. We'll have some of the comments here. Sarah Orleski from TSN asking the head coach point blank, you know, some of the same issues that have plagued this team in the past. And before she could even finish, Paul said all of them. All of them were at the forefront last night. He said, again, I mentioned it already, a good start, good puck movement, like the tempo, take a dumb penalty, i.e. the Trouba one on the hook, leaving the zone, and everything falls apart from then. And then, you know, she tried to ask another one, and he went even further, delved into the fact that the defensive zone coverage, he said, we're not in position. The penalty kill, you know, Dmitry Kulikov a little high on that. There's a guy behind him. Buff chasing the guy on the top on the power play. Two goals go in, and then it just gets away from them a lot and snowballed. And so all the familiar things that we're used to seeing that this team struggled with, that we've heard about them improving and we talked about, the defensive zone, the penalty kill. I thought the power play looked really good, but it did not capitalize. 0 for 8 last night. We're there, but again, I go back to the fact that the whole team deflation, when you have a great start and you don't get that goal and then you get scored on, and just 3 goals in 2 minutes is something that, I guess, until you get past stuff like that and you get over it, it's going to continue to be the way it is, because they just seem to deflate after having that great start but then giving up the goals right away. The punchback wasn't very good. There wasn't curtailing that at all. Mr. Rewicki, your thoughts on last night's game?
Yeah, I mean, it's basically what we had seen for, I mean, you guys touched on it, right? Like we've seen it. It's like that. I kept thinking about that Barry Bonds quote when he was kind of combative with the media. It's like Sanford and Son. It's rerun after rerun after rerun. Like, how many times have Jets fans seen that game before? That was the most troubling thing. Like, you could not have drawn up a loss in a worse fashion opening night than what we saw there. It was like every single worst possible fear. I think maybe word, you guys said this word. I'll try to come up with a different one later on. But the word of the day, kids, is snowball. It just, everything came together in one, and it turned into this avalanche that they had no answer for. And so it's, you're basically clinging on to the proverbial, it's just one game, but like that's kind of the optimism.
Which is what losers do, right? Or like, whether we're fans or players, that's what, when you lose, that's what everyone says. But to me, what's really alarming, boys, is that exactly what you're touching on there, Wicks, and I said before, it embodied all of the weak concerns coming into the season, where I'd said 100 times, how is this all going to be solved? By pixie dust? Like the simple defensive breakdowns we saw were god-awful and horrendous. And with guys that are normally pretty sound, like a Morrissey on the second goal. I don't know, man. I know you don't want to stand on the edge after game one, but the concerns that were from last year, the concerns that we saw in the preseason, and going forward thinking that they'd be somehow remedied by the start of the regular season, they all smiled their evil smile last night in what's going to hold back this team, man. And it's a scary situation right now where you go now, like, you could be 0-3 in the snap of a finger. coming up.
Took a lot of tweets last night, which I'm sure you guys did as well. What's the theme for today's show is probably it's only one game. And I didn't reply to any of them because it is only one game. However, that's the question, and I think that's the focus of we talked about it through some of the preseason. And I'm still a guy that I'll wait 10 to 15 games into a season, maybe 12. But how do you feel about that? Like, is it – where are you on the concern level with this first game?
Well, I'm very concerned because these are the mistakes that were made last night. Like, trying to go through all the goals here, right? When just the level of simple breakdown. And they weren't – it wasn't new guys or young guys necessarily. And go all the way to the even to the fourth goal with the – you get a horrible change by Myers – Buff has no chance to get over to Marlowe, but Marlowe's left alone. Amia can't catch up. And it's just a bad line change that bites him. And how many times have we seen that? And all the different ways to break down defensively, they're not allowed to be breaking down like that anymore. And I still – and the whole – you know, when it's being said that, like, Buff chasing, right, on that one goal, people were saying that a lot on Twitter. But they're in a – I have to assume anyway that they're in a man-D coverage in that situation when Buff's chasing like that. And that then responsibility falls on Perreault, who's standing there in no man's land. And Toby Enstrom, you'd think, could help him a little bit by communicating. But this the level of breakdown, this is exactly what we saw – last year. It's exactly what held the team back. And Paul Maurice, as much as we enjoy listening to him talk and you know, we'll jump on a grenade for him, when he's coming on saying, yeah, these are the things that we got to do, and we're emphasizing all these things. They've emphasized these things year after year after year, and you got your first chance to go out there and make a statement. And I wouldn't have minded if the Jets lost 5-4 and Toronto flexed its offensive muscle. That's one thing. But the nature of these goals to me is of great concern.
Yeah, I mean that's exactly how it is. And I think there needs to be a little bit of a take a step back, and it is only one game because it's true. Like, as the reason it's going to be so fervid this morning is because. What do you have to look on if you're a Jets fan? You have the one game. Like, that's all you have for this season, so you're going to freak out a little bit. So, like, I think there is, a part that should be, you know, take a step back. Mm-hmm. Maybe let's see how the next couple of games play out before we officially freak out. But I don't think you should take too far of a step back, having said that as well. Like, there were just, like I said, to have every single one of your worst fears confirmed in about a 5-minute stretch in the first period, and then not have them alleviated as the game goes on, that's the major trouble sign to me. And it was all, once again, based inside their own end. That's the worst part. The power play, like, yeah, it goes 0-for-8, it struggled, and it needed to score, and they didn't get it. And like you said earlier, it's a completely different game if they get one or two goals. But the power play actually looked half decent. Like, those are the things you can kind of look past and say, well, at least there's a bit of promise there, right? They moved the puck around well. They got some good chances. The puck didn't just go in for them. And it's, you know, game one of 82. But to have what happened in the other half of the ice, and not only that, but to have it happen on basic, you know, AAA hockey mistakes that should be – these should not be, you know, things that continuously go on with a team week in and week out, let alone year in and year out. That's where I think the panic and the anger, I think, can be pretty justified, even though it's game one.
This is The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Wessler, Brandon Rewicki talking about the Jets losing the opener 7-2 to the Toronto Maple Leafs. Again, the Boss Pizza fan line open at 9 for your comments. So here's the question. If we're talking about this, and Paul Maurice addressed it directly last night, again, when Sarah Orleski asked him, you know, a lot of the same issues that's plagued this team, and he said all of them, all of the issues that have plagued this team were at the forefront last night. Who do you blame? Because we're hearing a lot about if it's Paul Maurice. But my point to this is if Paul Maurice knows that and he addresses it and he faces it head on and he's talking about it, he's definitely coaching it, who do you blame?
Well, this is the crappy thing about sports, man, that's not fair. you can, you know, you go through each of the goals and the mistakes made and, like, the dumb Trouba penalty and Morrissey doesn't move off the faceoff and Kadri strolls through the blue paint and all the shots. And, like, you can assign blame and be correct about it for each of the goals and any of the mistakes made on the ice. But we all know who's ultimately held responsible in sports, right?
And yeah, no, I understand who's going to be held responsible for this. But, like, we've been hearing this for months, and he literally said all the same problems happened last night, and we're working on it, and we're doing it. If you're literally working on it and you're aware of it, it's a different thing if he comes out and he says, well, I don't think it was that bad. There was one or two mistakes. But, like, when he literally says all of our issues that we're working on trying to get better were at the forefront last night, tells me that he is literally working with this team on getting better at these things. And I know who's going to be held accountable for it, but who do you actually blame for it being like that? Like, is it not – when we broke down those goals, we're not talking about the young players.
No.
We're talking about Jacob Trouba hooking penalty, leaving the own zone. We're talking about Dustin Byfuglien slashing a guy twice at the top. We're talking about Matthew Perreault in no man's land. And I don't want to sit here and go, like, they're good hockey players. But when it's not being executed, who do you blame? Is it not on the players to execute this thing that...
Well, it is, but it doesn't... You know, the way this league especially works, right? If we're talking about a football team, you cut this guy, cut that guy. These guys have guaranteed contracts. They're here. And if Paul Maurice can't extract the attention to detail and level necessary for them to be, and it's not as if they can't tune into it, right? There's just a remarkable lack of consistency that has plagued this team since arrival. And at its height, it was upon Paul Maurice's arrival where everyone was tuned in just that much, little bit more, and they responded magnificently. And there were moments in time last year where it looks like that was fading, the tuning in and out. And this is, as we're saying, this is the worst start possible. It has to flip mode against Calgary, or this edge gets real slippery in a hurry.
We got a break, but we will continue this conversation on the Jets 7-2 loss to open the game when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you, and we're delving into the 7-2 loss at home to start the season for the Winnipeg Jets against the Toronto Maple Leafs. So we're hearing it on Twitter already, and I'm hearing again, Paul Maurice, Paul Maurice, Paul Maurice, and I understand that. We're not holding him responsible, but I'm just delving into this, and we'll let you weigh in on this now, Brandon, because we have some time. Like, who's to blame here? Because I don't believe he's not sitting there coaching it. You can hold him responsibility for it's not working. The results aren't what you're coaching coming through. But I just personally, I'm having a hard time alleviating this or putting it all on a coach. It's in my mind, he addressed it head on last night in the post game. All of our same issues that we're working on came to the forefront. So don't the players bear some responsibility for the execution of this?
Of course they do. You would be foolish to say otherwise, that it's, you know, solely on the head of the guy behind the bench, right? Like, and especially early on, Justin Bourne of The Athletic, I know, was watching some of the horrific nightmares in the defensive zone coverage, and he made, I think, a valid point that, you know, this early in the season, that's more on players than necessarily coaching. But having said that, Paul Maurice has very little time to turn it around. And if you want to give him a pass in game one, then I think that's okay. But this is a trend we've seen for years now. Not weeks, not months, not five games, years. And this team, we've mentioned it a number of times, this team is way too talented to play like that. What we saw last night was a performance worthy of the Colorados.
and, you know, an expansion team. Like, if the Golden Knights played like that, if somebody said, hey, that was Toronto versus the Golden Knights, nobody would have batted an eye. They've been like, yeah, that's what you would expect out of a team like that. Not a team like the Jets, who people think can be kind of a dark horse when it comes to maybe making some noise in the playoffs. So at some point, and we see it all the times in the NHL too, right, where new coach comes in, same group of players, and you see almost a 180. And it happens with good coaches too. We saw it in St. Louis, right? Things weren't working in St. Louis last year. Mike Yeo comes in. Maybe it doesn't change a whole lot. Like, you know, like,
we
doesn't
saw it
change.
With Paul Maurice arrived, man.
Yeah, right? Yeah. Like, it's that sort of thing where, you know, ultimately it's up to the head coach to get his message through to the players. And if the players do not deliver, then you have to make a change there. And for the Jets, they can wait long. 20 games to me is too long. Your season is done if you wait 20 games. They have to get this figured out probably by the weekend in terms of, you know, fixing major, major, major issues with this team. Maybe not necessarily grab a win right away, but they got to fix things and look miles better than what we saw last night.
So Paul Maurice addressed that head on last night, I thought, in his post game. We'll hear that later in the show as well. The players, from what I heard, Patrick Laine called it embarrassing. So they're all aware of it, and that was going to be my next question. What's your leeway with this? I give it 10 to 15 games, maybe 10 to 12, to see what happens here before. What's your leeway with this, considering the start last night?
It completely depends on the severity of struggle, right? The Jets go 0-3 to open the season up, and the elements are red hot. The seat is wicked hot. Like, it's look out that early. It just depends on the severity. If they're sniffing around 500 or something like that, you know, 8 games in, then that's something that people, I think, there'll be some more tolerance and patience involved. But if you're talking about some horrific level of struggle, where the boys come out and, you know, 0-3, lose these couple of games here on the weekend, and then I'm not sure off the top of my head, it's Carolina or Vancouver they go. So you got, you know, Calgary, Edmonton, then Vancouver, Carolina. It depends. If they're still winless after 3-4 games, then I think the number two could hit the fan in a hurry, especially and maybe mostly if the losses are constructed as it was last night, which is completely unacceptable.
Well, and from what I caught at the end of the Battle of Alberta, it's not going to be an easy road trip coming up. We'll delve into the rest of the NHL picture as well. We're going to hear from the Jets and Paul Maurice. We'll do that at the top of the hour at the Royal Sports Power Hour. And don't forget, Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 at 9 a.m. today. I know a lot of you have your opinions, and all opinions are welcome, so we'll do that at 9 as well. We'll talk some Blue Bombers next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you, and TSN 1290 and Gypsum Drywall Interiors present Caring for Kids. Support the staff and services of the Children's Hospital Foundation of Manitoba today. Text KIDS to 1290.90. Standard message rates may apply. Every time you do, Gypsum Drywall Interiors will donate $1 to the Children's Hospital, up to $1,000. Your actions can help the Children's Hospital keep caring for kids across Manitoba. Kids like Michaela, who is currently battling cancer. For more on Caring for Kids, visit tsn1290.ca. Much more in the Jets 7-2 loss to open the season coming up. They'll practice today at noon at MTS Iceplex if you want to go take that in. And they'll head to Calgary tomorrow, I believe, and take on the Flames Saturday night. Edmonton on Monday, and then to Vancouver for a 3-game road trip. Also, Boss Pizza Fan Line will be open at 9 o'clock to get your thoughts and comments on the opening night loss to the Leafs. Right now, we're going to switch to the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, though. They host the Tiger Cats tomorrow night at IGF for a game. We have both Manuk Dentcher Blue Bomber Game Day and Manitoba Moose Hockey will be joining in progress. Manuk Blue Bomber Game Day starts at 5:30 and goes till 7:30 at kickoff. And then, of course, Manitoba Moose Hockey will come in and they'll have a blend with the guys Darren Bombing, Chris Walby, and Mr. Troy Westwood as well mixed in there. Bombers and Tiger Cats, gentlemen. We talked about it. We heard from head coach O'Shea yesterday about Justin Medlock and his potential struggles. The Hamilton Tiger Cats coming in. Any raised eyebrow or eye on Medlock during this game, or is that just a one-off?
Well, it needs to be a one-off. That's for darn sure. So I'm sure that he'll recover, and you would expect him to recover for sure. If he doesn't recover in this game, then you've got then there's a problem for sure. But at this point in time, there's no reason for me to believe that he won't bounce back.
What's the key in this game, in your guys' mind? Mazzoli's coming in here, a bit of a rough one, but playing well. To me, it's a big decision June Jones pulled off. Making the quarterback switch when he took over and just, you know, getting more out of this offense than we saw under Kent Austin.
Yeah, I don't think it was a big decision. There was obvious, fairly substantial turmoil with Zach Collaros. So and you know, Mazzoli is not an unknown entity. He's filled in fairly decently up to the last couple of years here. But there was obviously remarkable struggle here with Zach Collaros. And by all indications, he will not be involved with this organization next year. And you look at their defense, for instance, and you know, you got Samadi Lawrence and a number of other players that are much better than what they were putting on early on with Jeff Reinbold as the DC and such. So it's not a team, they're not nowhere near as bad as when they were 0-8, but you're also talking about a team that shipped out John Chick, a team that just shipped out CJ Gable. So I think so long as the Bombers don't keep the Ticats, don't give them hope through turnovers. I just don't see at this point in time with the level that the Bombers are playing at and sort of the life support that the Ticats are on, unless you basically inject life into the game with turnovers, I just don't think the Ticats are constructed to hang with the Bombers.
No, this is similar. I mean, hey, look, it's similar to the first meeting with the Ticats, and I think it's similar to the last game against Ottawa, right? Like, there's just no excuses for the Bombers to, never mind lose this one, but to not have it in their control, basically, from the get-go here. So, I mean, looking at the matchup, there's not a whole lot to break down, because the Bombers should handily beat this Ticats team in basically every facet of the game. One of the things I'll be interested in, and I guess it depends on health too, is, you know, Julian Fioragudino had a pretty big fumble last week that could have been a lot more catastrophic had Edmonton capitalized on it. And I think he's had at least one or two other fumbles this year as well. And Matt Coates would get the start if he's not ready to go. And I'm not so convinced that if Matt Coates gets the call, that he doesn't keep that starting job the rest of the season. So, you know, Julian Fioragudino, that's kind of one of the side battles or the side aspects I'll be watching in this game, is if Fioragudino can't go, he might be watching Matt Coates take his starting job for good, because I think Coates just gives you a little bit more than Fioragudino does at this point.
People are high on him.
Yeah, Gudino's a dependable enough guy, but there's no real flash to his game, no real substance. I think Matt Coates, I think he gives you a little bit more at this point, and he had a nice play in that Edmonton game. I think the only target that he had all game long was a big one down the sidelines there to get the Bombers into first and goal.
Maurice Leggett looks good to go after practice yesterday, who left the game in Edmonton with an injury. Is he an MOP candidate? Defensive Player of the Year candidate, I would assume. But
well, with the Bombers, yeah, but certainly not.
Not in the league?
I don't think in the league, no.
Wouldn't garner any support for that?
No. Especially not when you're third on your own team. And you could make the case that Darvin Adams, I mean, it would be between him and Darvin Adams for the third spot. But defensive player, for sure. I'm kind of surprised a lot of people, when we talk about defensive player, and mainly just in the West, I guess, Alex Singleton almost kind of gets just pushed to the side here. Alex Singleton...
No, I don't think he gets pushed to the side, brother.
Well, I just watching TSN, they didn't really mention Singleton as a candidate for Defensive Player of the Year. I guess that's maybe what I should preface that with, is some of the... I don't know if it was Stiegel and Climie and those guys, but it might have been one of the broadcast crews that said it was Leggett.
this guy, Elamimian, and then, oh, yeah, I guess maybe Singleton. Hmm. To me, Alex Singleton is the number one candidate right now. Leggett's having a phenomenal, phenomenal year, and he should get an all-star nod, which was a crime that he didn't get one last year. But to me, Alex Singleton's the guy. When he's the on-field general and when he sets the tone for that defense and is basically a destroyer anytime somebody within 10 yards of the line of scrimmage gets the football and that defense is 100 points better than number two, to me, I don't even – like, it's been great and he's been outstanding, but I don't think I have to think too hard about who the West nominee is, and I think it's Singleton.
I'm right there with you. I don't care how the hell they do it. But when you've got a defense as completely dominant as Calgary's is, you've got to find the defensive player of the year somewhere within that group. There's just zero doubt about that.
Who would you nominate out of Calgary?
I would look to their D-line or to Singleton, as Wicks is saying.
Yeah.
But there's zero doubt. When your defense is that level of brilliant and everything else after that is an also-ran, I don't know how you can, you know, to give Leggett... sure, give them the nod with the Bombers, but to even consider the Bombers' defense as like the defensive player of the year is going to come out of the Bombers' defense is really hard for me to accept.
Yeah, and for Mo Leggett, that just means you're the second best defensive player in the league this year because I think he's better than anything the East has to offer. It's just you I think as a fan and as somebody who covers the CFL all season long, you have to give the ultimate respect to what Calgary's done. You have to find a way to honor that defense because they are one of the stingiest, toughest defenses we've seen in
years
decades.
And years and years, yeah.
Yeah. So we'll get into this much more tomorrow and some of the diversities that'll be the game between the Hamilton Tiger Cats and the Blue Bombers is routining up right now as well on the Big Show TSN 1290. But are we all on board that the Bombers should win this game, move to 11-3?
Should be a double-digit win, yeah.
Double-digit.
I would agree. Double digits.
Make them pay. 11-3.
Yeah, who would have thought?
Like, they had 11 wins last year, wasn't it? 11-7?
Yep.
Or 12, and people were saying, because everybody in the preseason, I remember, and even going down to training camp and talking to other people in the media, and we're like, you know, can they get better? Can they do this? And everybody was saying, well, they had 11 wins last year. Like, what's better, 12-6? Like, basically, we expect the same thing from them. It looks like they are on par to even be better than that. Like, well, what do you think they could finish it? Like, are we talking a 13-3 or 13-5? Are we talking?
Yeah, I think at this point in time, they've got... With a number of games left here, there's no reason it, you know, just very simply, when you're talking about having five games left, they could very easily go 3-2. So they could be for sure 12 and quite possibly 13, maybe even better than that.
And it depends, too, like if they have, if Calgary keeps winning and if the, you know, they clinch the number two spot with three games to go, however that works out, then, you know, the final three games don't really matter record-wise. They found a way to improve on last year, which I thought was impossible, especially with BC. Like, we all kind of expected BC to challenge Calgary.
Yep.
And we had the Canadian, the ultimate Canadian giveaway trip contest. And
that's
how many,
right.
How
people many, kept how many, picking the Bombers to go to Ottawa.
Like, I would say 90 to 95% of our winners said, take me to Ottawa so I can watch the Bombers in the Grey Cup. And
we
I know
thought,
me
well,
and Troy,
cute.
Me and Troy laughed at them. Yeah. We laughed at them. Like, sorry, but we did because it was kind of a foreign concept. I think everyone was almost in agreement. Like, hey, you know, get a playoff berth again. Mm-hmm. Maybe this time you grab a win on the road in the playoffs, and that's a great season. And it's just crazy how, you know, all the fans and their wild optimism for the season was bang on. They were bang on. And it's just bizarre to me that it's flipped like that. And a Grey Cup berth is still a long shot at this point, but it's more so the dominance of Calgary than it is what Winnipeg is necessarily doing, which I would not have pictured going into the season.
Got a chance, baby.
Interesting. Around the CFL as well this weekend, heading into week 16, Hamilton and Winnipeg kick it off tomorrow night, 7:30 IGF. Saskatchewan's in Toronto. Ottawa is in BC. Edmonton will visit Montreal. How do you see this playing out, especially out east? I mean, Toronto's 7-7. I'll give them a playoff spot. Ottawa's 5-9. Hamilton's 3-10. We just picked Winnipeg. most likely to win by double digits, Troy said, against Hamilton. So they're going to go to 3-11.
Well, there's no third team in the East, right?
It's going to
be Toronto. Will Toronto with the way it's set up here, with a 3-point lead, they should be able to, and a healthy Ricky Ray, and that's the whole thing, right? Ricky Ray's healthy. Trevor Harris is set to play this week. Those two guys stay healthy, and they at least give themselves a chance to get to the Grey Cup with those two guys being healthy. But Hamilton's dead. Montreal's dead. This is a two-horse race in the East.
So Saskatchewan 7-6, Edmonton 7-6, BC 6-7. BC hosts Ottawa this weekend. How does the West play out down there?
How does the West play out down there?
Well, 7-6, 7-6, 6-7. One of those are you sticking with Saskatchewan and Edmonton? BC hosts Ottawa this weekend get a win.
I don't like where Jonathan Jennings seems to have regressed a little bit this year, and I don't really like what I'm seeing from BC. So yeah, I'm going to stick with Saskatchewan and Edmonton to get it done. And I'm not sure which of those two is going to be lucky enough to fit into the crossover. But either one of them can make a whole bunch of noise. I think Edmonton ultimately becomes the more dangerous team later in the season, and I would because of that, I suspect that they will capture third spot in the West. But if Edmonton were to finagle that crossover spot, they could go through the East and just decimate everyone on their way to the Cup.
Yeah, to me, BC's just way too they're way too Jacqueline. You know, the Riders are Jacqueline Hyde. BC is a level above that. And, you know, it's this will be a conversation we'll have to have, you know, in a week or two. But in terms of who you'd rather the Bombers face, if the Bombers grab that number two seed, I'd want to see Saskatchewan, because I kind of agree with Troy where Edmonton's got a bit of that sneaky New York Giants vibe. Like
mostly because the Eli Manning toss it up, somebody please catch it.
Yeah, that might play a bit of a role in it. But they're going to get healthier, yeah. And they're going to start to play together more. And I know the 7-0 was a bit of a mirage earlier in the year, but I also think that they're not too far off from that sort of a record. Like I think ultimately their talent level is probably more than Saskatchewan can give you. And I think I would trust Mike Riley more than Kevin Glenn when it comes to a road playoff game. So as much as it would be the ultimate just disgusting end to a season, I would take my chances welcoming in the Riders to IGF for a playoff game over Edmonton.
Wow. Interesting.
That would be a lot of fun, wouldn't it, to have a home playoff game against Saskatchewan? That would be fun for sure. Their defense scares me a little bit, but in an overall sense, I'm more frightened of Edmonton as well.
I'd take either one, but yeah, I get what you're saying about the Riders coming in playoff time. That would be interesting.
That would be pretty crazy, yeah.
That would be crazy. We're going to take a break here, but we're going to talk about the Jets' 7-2 loss again at the top of the hour and hear some audio from the coaching, from Paul Maurice and some of the players. But up next, we're going to delve into the wild card game and set up the divisional series in the Major League Baseball postseason. Get some picks here, but I'm going to ask you a hockey question about the wild card game as well. That's next to The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on The Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN 1290.ca. Jets lose to the Leafs 7-2. We'll delve into that again at the top of the hour for the Royal Sports Power Hour. And don't forget, the Boss Pizza fan line open at 9 o'clock for your comments. Josh Morrissey of the Jets is going to join us at 8:45 as well, and we'll get his thoughts on not only last night's game, but the season that is now underway. Yesterday, gentlemen, Archie Bradley of the Arizona Diamondbacks became the first relief pitcher in history to hit a triple in postseason play with a clutch two-run, three-bagger in the seventh inning.
I like to view myself as an athlete, as a guy who can still do some stuff at the plate. They've let me take BP and get some at-bats all year long. I knew the situation. I was honestly, you know, I was thinking getting a hit. Like, why not? You know, they're not really expecting me to swing the bat that well. So I scoot up on the dish, kind of grinded my knuckles, and was like, let's go, man. Bring it in here.
I love that. A first first relief pitcher to hit a triple in postseason history. It cashed two runs on the triple in the seventh inning, and the Diamondbacks go on to beat the Colorado Rockies 11-8. They'll go on to face the Dodgers. The postseason divisional standings start today, gentlemen, and we'll start with the series and get your thoughts on who moves on. Going to be a good one. Red Sox and Astros get underway today at 3 o'clock. Then the Yankees and the Indians go at 6:30 tonight. Who do you like in the Red Sox and the Astros?
I'm cheering for the Red Sox, and you might think I'm cheering for them because you love the Astros so much, but that's not the case. Because ultimately I want to see ultimately the Red Sox and the Yankees go at it, right? So, yeah, I got to cheer for the Red Sox in that specific series, and I think that should be a doozy of a series as well.
I don't even see how the Astros can score a run and keep it within 10 all series. No, I think Houston. I'm going to take Houston. I like Houston's team.
You both disgust me right now.
I'm a picking Houston, man. No, come on. I like Houston's team. I think Cleveland's awful good. It'll be tough, but I think Houston has a good enough team to make the World Series.
I think the Astros beat the Red Sox. I think they do it with Verlander. I know Chris Sale has been unreal, but I think their bats will carry them through this. If they go on to face the Cleveland Indians, I'm very suspect because of the Cleveland starting pitching. But over the Red Sox, I like the Astros, so I'll take them as well. Cleveland and the New York Yankees, who do you like there?
Well, I think Cleveland wins it, but I'm going to be cheering for the Yankees for ultimately watching the Red Sox and the Yankees. But Cleveland does look pretty tough.
I have Cleveland winning that series as well.
Cleveland's on another level. They've found that they're kind of like I don't see a way they lose. Their starting pitching is among the best. Never mind this year, Pat. Maybe the best we've ever seen. Like they're being mentioned among the Brave staffs of the early '90s. It's going to be real hard for me to not pick Cleveland to win the World Series.
Much like you, Wesley, would like to see the Red Sox and the Yankees, I would love to see a Dodgers-Nationals seven-game series. But the Nationals are taking on the defending World Series champion Cubs. Who do you like in that series?
I got a big old soft spot in my heart for the Cubs. I got to go with the Cubbies, Mr. Madden.
Dusty Baker is a manager of the Washington Nationals. How does this not end in some kind of mismanaged heartbreaking game
yes.
five? Who would have thought? I'll take the Cubbies as the hardened postseason Warriors.
What's his kid now? 23? He'll be running around home plate and picking up bats, and he'll be like 23 years old. Get out of there, Ken! I really want the Nationals to win this series. I would like to see them go on and face the Dodgers, but a Cubs-Dodgers series would be epic
be
as
majestic.
Well. Just epic. So I'm actually going to go with the Nationals getting over the hump this year. I think that's a lot of baseball for the Cubs. We'll see if they can get it done, but it wouldn't break my heart if they did. D-backs and Dodgers should be a good one as well. The D-backs and the Dodgers have had a great yearly series so far. What are your thoughts on that one?
I got to pay homage to the Diamondbacks jerseys and such. They're the sharpest looking team, but I'm going with the Dodgers here, ultimately cheering for a Yankees-Dodgers World Series, man. How much fun would that be?
That would be something, too. Yeah. Not as good as an Astros-Dodgers one, but who do you like, Dodgers or?
Oh,
I got the Dodgers, too.
I'll take Dodgers.
We'll take a break, get back into the Jets game next on the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Our province is packed with shining stars in the world of sports. Every week, TSN 1290 would like to showcase and reward these individuals who are making a big impact and difference in what they do. Nominate a Manitoban athlete, coach, or volunteer who is dedicated to making their sport matter. Every Friday on The Big Show, we'll showcase a Subway Sports Star of the Week and reward him or her with a $50 Subway gift card. Visit tsn1290.ca to nominate your sports star, and we could be featuring them very soon, including on tomorrow's Big Show. Just go to tsn1290.ca and nominate somebody. It's that simple. We'll try and get them a $50 gift card from our good friends at Subway. Eat fresh. Royal Sports Power Hour here on The Big Show. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, Brian Munns, Jets analyst, going to join us live at 7:30. We have your NHL news and notes, and Cam Newton is in very, very, very hot water right now for an exchange with a female reporter. We'll have that in our next segment. But we've been talking about it all morning, the 7-2 loss for the Jets. The Boss Pizza fan line is open at 9 to get your comments on it. But we'll delve into Paul Maurice's post-game comments. And the first question out of the gate for the head coach of the Jets was, what happened?
Oh, we came out of the gate nice and strong, felt pretty good. Took a dumb penalty and had a bit of an unusual, the hardest hit we threw all night was on Mason on the PK and got away from us. And then we were struggling to do things easily, and we were probably looking maybe to do things a little easier. And that's it.
Assessment of that?
Doesn't sound very happy. And, if he's referencing a lack of physicality, late in the game, Buff had the hit and such, but a couple of to start the third period, you come out, you think, you're down 4-0, but like the boys were talking, Paulie and Bayak and Munns were talking on the broadcast, I think you come out and you win that period, right? You got to shift into that mindset, sort of. And for Toronto to come out and score the way they did, that quickly in the third period, Trouba lunging at Kadri. Both Armia and Trouba follow Kadri into the corner. Morrissey, it's pretty easy. There's only two Leafs in the zone. Pretty easy to identify the most dangerous man when one of them's in the corner. Morrissey's standing still. Lowry's gliding through the zone. So there's just the lack of oomph. It was, and sure, down 4-0, it's easy to fall into that. But when you're a pro and you gotta go make some sort of a statement, and bam, 5-0, and then it just continued to get worse. But it's just Paul Maurice. Yeah, it's only game one, but how disheartened does he sound there?
It's just he sounds pissed
off.
He almost sounds
mid season to me.
Well, he sounds to me like a coach who's been working on this stuff, and we heard from all the fans and all in the post game. Like he sounds like one of the fans who was probably not looking for things to be perfect in game one, but definitely looking for some of the things they've been working on to not look like that.
Well, and look at the other end of the ice with Toronto, who is not, we all agree, not a perfect defensive team by any stretch of the imagination, and on the back end, probably less talented than what the Jets have. But they have structure in place. It's not a system, but structurally they're very sound. They take away the middle of the ice. They make life easy or hard on you. They for the most part are content to just kind of keep things to the perimeter and allow some long distance shots. And then at that point, they kind of work to get the puck back if that's the case. And that's just not what we saw from the Jets. There was basically zero structure for much of the game, and that to me is more concerning than if they had given up a 4 or a 5 spot. And the other thing that Paul Maurice says, and I think some people might have echoed this, Jacob Trouba took an idiotic penalty. There's no doubt about that. But don't overemphasize the importance of that penalty. Because, look, you can take a dumb penalty, give up a power play goal, and even be down 2 after that. But to say that things unraveled because of that specific penalty, good teams can battle back from that. Like, come on. Don't say the penalty happened, and then that's the reason why this team fell apart. Like, there was a lot of issues that happened after that.
I actually think that's what happened. I think they were all over the Leafs. I think they had 3 very good-looking power plays that they couldn't score on. And then a guy hooks a guy coming out of the zone, which we've been talking about and the team's been talking about. I don't mind you taking a hit and elbowing a guy when you're trying to be physical. I don't mind you hooking a guy coming out of your own zone is literally why they brought Paul Dvorsky in.
Well, I don't even know if it's that. It's dumb. Like that's not even a slasher or something they're trying to get rid of. It's so dumb it goes beyond that. I'm just saying, don't say Trouba took the penalty. That's why the Jets lost 7-2.
A penalty and then a penalty kill fail. You go down 1-0 and things unravel? I mean, if things are unraveling, you're down 1-0 in the first period. You got some serious freaking problems in the locker room.
Well, Maurice was asked how things unraveled.
it doesn't take much for them. They finish on the opportunities they have. They got a good sharp offensive team. They got the pucks in the net real quick.
That reminds me of Twitter last night. Darren, who I believe called the show a week ago and was asking, remember when I called in and said they don't finish enough on their opportunities? And I said, and we said, well, they're the seventh scoring team in the league. But he was like, no, like, I think his point is like what Maurice was saying. Toronto gets an opportunity, they finish. Winnipeg got an opportunity. And I'll say this again. I thought the power play looked phenomenal in the first period. Although they didn't score, I thought Anderson was the sole reason. But that's sort of what Darren was trying to say is what Maurice said there is they got an opportunity, they finished.
I didn't think the power play looked phenomenal. It looked decent and good. There's nice puck movement. The biggest save Anderson made, I thought, on the power plays was the line A one-timer when he came across the crease real nice. But it wasn't like, you know, a few bars were hit or Anderson was making highlight reel type saves to me. And even to say, well, the Leafs capitalized when they had the chances. Well, the chances were gift-wrapped, right? When Tyler Myers lets Kadri soiree between him and the net on that penalty kill, and Kadri can skate through the blue paint, whack, 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 goal. Like, that's not making the most of an opportunity. That's being given free rein in front of Mason as he's making a bunch of saves. And when you got, you know, Morrissey standing in cement off the draw there, like, that's making the most of opportunities. These are mistakes by Jets that gave the opportunities to the Leafs. It wasn't like the Leafs were... And this is why the forensic breakdown of this loss is so crappy, is because it's, you know, if the Leafs score 4 or 5 goals and they're nice goals, you go, well, those are some nice goals there. These are more just hideous breakdown gifts from the Jets. That's why it's so distraught. That's why people are so down right now.
It was the monumental ineptitude of the Jets' defense makes it easy for teams to finish. Like, if they're going to play like that, teams are going to finish on them. I mean, Mitch Marner could have shot with his stick flipped upside down with how much time he had there on that tap. Like, it's wild how much time other teams have within around the crease in terms of tap-in goals against the, like, a lot of teams and a lot of AHL teams. Every AHL team is going to finish an opportunity like that. Like, that's the disheartening part, is just the basic, simple breakdowns of a man is uncovered in the most dangerous part of the ice.
And the third goal, that's the one you're talking with Nylander, I think. The worst goal of the night, right? Where you got Buff chasing Matthews, and if they're in man, okay. But everyone needs to recognize what the hell's going on out there. And zero communication with Enstrom and Pro is simply standing there. Nylander behind him having a picnic and feeds him. And people were critical of Mason on that goal.
Right? Speaking of Mason, here's Paul Maurice on his debut with the Winnipeg Jets.
No more than the rest of the hockey club. I mean, five was enough. I don't think that, I mean, he's going to have a couple he'd like to have back, but there wasn't anything that you're looking at saying, my God, how did he miss that? The first goal, he got bowled over by our own guy. He's got no chance on that. The next one's a real quick little deflection, and he's not going to do anything with the third one.
So from there, Sarah Orleski,
he
TSN.
He didn't do nothing about the fourth one either.
TSN Sarah Orleski was asking Paul Maurice. The power play was 0-for-8. The penalty kill was...
Two goals,
2-for-4 for the Leafs. And Sarah and the defensive zone, which we've talked about. And Sarah asked Paul just about the same issues that have been addressed with this team before.
Paul, so many of the areas that you seem to emphasize and kind of work on throughout the...
Yeah, just training. All of them. Power play. And we were so good in the power play on the... But the power play wasn't as bad as the number will tell. I mean, we had some really good... Their goaler was good. And he made some good saves. I'm not saying that's the game, but he handled his rebounds especially well, I thought. So that part was good. Yeah, the rest of it wasn't.
And the Jets, like, the ominous aspect of that first period, the Jets outshoot Toronto 17-11. The Jets had 4 power plays, and they're down 3-0. That's messed up, man.
Yeah.
Right? That's
how it quote-unquote unraveled real quick, 3 goals in 2 minutes.
Yeah, and the game's over almost after 12. Like, yeah, you can come back technically, and the Jets have done it many times before, but that's just kind of the reality of the situation where and it's not like – this is why it's so frustrating with this team. It's not like the shot clock kind of indicated there. It's not like they were hemmed inside their own zone for 15 out of 20 minutes. It's just three little mistakes. Three mistakes, like three separate occasions, and each time it's fatal. Like it would almost be a little bit more comforting if they had got dominated, but it's just three times you make three mistakes and they all end up in the back of the net before you know what's going on. And that's kind of been this team's MO when things get out of control, is for the most part it's not complete domination against them. It's just breakdown here, breakdown there. How are we down two goals?
Well, and that's how we started the show today, was with me saying that's, of all the things that looked familiar with the issues that plagued the team, is what stood out to me is if they get a power play goal and make it 1-0 on one of those first three chances, to me it's a totally different game. This team has some momentum. It's going to go back and forth. Toronto's good. This is going to be a good hockey game. It's when they don't, and then they get two goals real quick, and it's just, I could see it in their body language. It's just the deflation of this team. And then, as Paul Maurice was saying, we start thinking things are easier and we get individual. Well, he didn't say individual, but I thought a lot of guys started becoming individual. It just unravels. And that's something that I guess plagues a team until you go down 2-0, win a game 4-3, and actually do that consistently to have that confidence where it just isn't so deflating to you as a team.
I hate that excuse, man. I just refuse to accept this whole, oh, the poor Jets, deflation, Brian Little, a couple years ago, they score a goal, we hang our heads, that whole quote, remember that one? Like, that just shut the hell up. I refuse to accept, that's just BS. You know, that's a nine-year-old team that we're talking about, deflated and all the rest of it. You're not allowed to get deflated. And for Christ's sake, not in your first opening home game with the expectation right across the board, right? The mindset, the expectations, down 1-2, even 3-0, man. That's the end of the first period. You just got to score the next goal. And then, so I just, the deflation part, I can't stand listening to those types of excuses for such an error-filled evening that was spread across far too many guys.
What this team needs to do more so than not get deflated after giving up a goal, I think, is get leads. Like go up a goal after a period. Go up two after. Like that was their biggest problem last year. They have the ability to come back. We've seen it a number of times, and they did it early last season, right? They did it against Carolina in the opener, and they did it against Toronto a couple of games later. But the biggest problem is, you're just, if you're behind the eight ball after 20, you're going to lose those games 90% of the time. Like, they have to find a way, instead of how do we dig ourselves out of these holes? Don't have a hole. Just get out there and set the pace and be the ones dictating the play. Instead, it's this constant, how do we come back from these deficits? You're just, winning teams don't do that. Winning teams find a way to get up early.
But winning teams also, like, it's interesting because we're kind of hinting at them scoring there. As opposed to, how about just some sound freaking defensive hockey and you go in after the first break 0-0, right? Just play decent defensive hockey, boys. Yeah. The quotes of Paul Maurice yesterday, what the exact terminology that he used, trying to remember the words that he used, but he talked about coming into this game with a certain level of understanding defensively and commitment. It wasn't there. It was void, and it was void in individuals, Myers, Trouba, Morrissey, Perreault, Armia, guys that it's not allowed to be. They're not allowed to collectively crap the bed like that, and boy, did they ever last night.
More from Maurice. We'll hear from Blake Wheeler and Patrick Laine as well, and Brian Munns will talk about this game and the upcoming road trip with us at the bottom of the hour. But up next, we discuss Cam Newton's comments on the Big Show and the Royal Sports Power Hour, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
TSN 1290 and Not AutoCorp present the Blue Bus. Before every Winnipeg Blue Bombers home game this season, we're taking W fans to Investors Group Field in our Not AutoCorp VIP Blue Bus. We'll pick you up and drop you off at the Not AutoCorp VIP tent to tailgate before the game. Then after all the football action, take you back to wherever you started. Prize includes 6 tickets to an upcoming Blue Bombers home game and free transportation to and from. Enter now to win at TSN 1290.
jetsnation.ca.
You get the feeling that we should organize a Jets Nation group hug somewhere sometime this morning? Like we should all meet somewhere, maybe come down to
1445
Pepin Highway.
I don't think Jets fans want physical contact right now.
Not with me, anyway.
Just a big hug.
Boss Pete's fan line open at 9. All opinions welcome, of course. I'm just hearing about it's, and this is why I was going on about Paul Maurice. Like I'm talking with Kevin the Garbage Man, longtime listener. He's upset with Paul Maurice,
yeah.
And a lot of people are, and I get that. But to me, I'm not alleviating responsibility on the head coach. But you have the same group of players dealing with the same defensive issues for one game into the seventh season now. You now want a third coach to come in.
Well, you know why I think coach?
Just let me finish. A third coach to come in and coach the same issues that we've seen over two coaches now. Like, at my perspective is, at some point, the players have to bear some responsibility in this.
Unless it's a systems thing, right? Like, for that third goal for me, like, the whole man D thing, I've always, it's bothered me how much they see it. And I assume that they were in it last night, and specifically on that third goal. Whenever you see Buff chasing around someone or any of the D guys chasing somebody around, then they're in man. And so, like, to ask Matthew Perreault, I just don't like why Buff needs to be chasing somebody up at the point and instead of switching off with one of the forwards and falling back into his natural position and putting the additional responsibility and the defensive level of play on a guy like Matthew Perreault, right? Like, that's Buff's natural spot, or that's the D's natural spot. I just hate seeing defensemen chasing around guys in the D zone, and we see so many goals against the Jets come from breakdowns when that starts to occur. And guys sort of lose track of where they're supposed to be and who they've got. We see it all the time.
We will get into this more. Brian Munn's joining us in the next segment, but I got to get to this. Cam Newton's exchange with a female reporter yesterday is teed up by TSN's Darren Detition.
National Football League. The Panthers are in Detroit to face the Lions this week. Cam Newton had a ridiculous exchange with a female reporter today.
To Kelvin.
I know you take a lot of pride in seeing your receivers play well. Devin Funchess has seemed to really embrace the physicality of his routes and getting those extra yards. Does that give you a little bit of an enjoyment to see him kind of truck sticking people out there?
It's funny to hear a female talk about routes. Like, it's funny. But fun is coming along, man. This is a big game for him.
Now, following the press conference, the reporter Jordan Rodrigue released a statement regarding Newton's comments, saying, "This afternoon, I did my job as an NFL beat writer and asked Cam Newton a question about one of his receivers. I was dismayed by his response, which not only belittled me, but countless other women before me who work in similar jobs. I sought Mr. Newton out as he left the locker room a few minutes later. He did not apologize for his comments." Now, the NFL has since released this statement saying, and I'm quoting here, "The comments are just plain wrong and disrespectful to the exceptional female reporters and all journalists who cover our league. They do not reflect the thinking of the league," end quote.
What is he thinking?
It's just dumb, right? Like, I've always been a big fan of Cam Newton and have defended certain actions of his. Typically that would be team related or on the field related, but this is just the level of dumb to this for a guy that's 28 years old. Like, sometimes you hear dumb old men say such things, right? If he's 70, maybe that's one thing, but how can a young cat 28 years old be that out of tune and touch with the environment around him to make such a dumb, it's beyond disappointing.
Brian Munns on the Jets next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
The iHeartRadio app is where you stream TSN 1290 and hundreds of other radio and digital stations. Check out the Perfect 4 menu to customize your listening experience. Your music, your stations, always free on the iHeartRadio app. The Big Show on TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. The Royal Sports Power Hour, your NHL news and notes coming up. We're going to go around the rest of the league, but we'll delve back into this 7-2 opening night loss for the Jets on home ice at the hands of the Toronto Maple Leafs. Welcome back in, TSN 1290 Jets analyst Brian Munns. Good morning, Brian.
Hey, looks like the sun's coming up.
I was just going to ask you, is the sun going to come out today?
The sun will come up, and there's 81 more nights. So thankfully the whole season didn't rest, and we didn't wait for one big game to settle the rest of our winter. Can we keep it in perspective like that, or is the
Well, let's start. How are you teeing up last night's game?
You know what? You look at it in a couple different ways. The first 15 minutes was exactly, I think, what everybody in the building had hoped for with how well they started the game. You know, the power play did a lot of really good things. When you watch this team at practice each and every day, like we get a chance to do, you see what they wanted to do and what Paul Maurice has been trying to implement. And if a couple pucks would have went in, you would have said, hey, they did exactly what they did during the preseason. But they went 0 for 3 at one point, and then all of a sudden Toronto gets their first chance, and Nazem Kadri is able to score. And as everybody knows, 2 minutes and 38 seconds later, the game was pretty much over after the Leafs scored those three goals. You could just kind of feel that, you know, Toronto had a little bit going, and all the credit in the world had to go to Frederik Andersen. He was the best player on the ice for both teams last night. So at the end of the night, you can say that the Leafs goalie in the first half was able to steal them a road win, and Toronto got the win, and Winnipeg will go back to the drawing board here today. But again, it's only one game, and you kind of see that happen sometimes where there's so much talk about everything, and on a night where nothing would go right for the team, that's kind of the way it happened for the Jets.
It's only one game, but that one game seemed to capture all of the concerns and fears of Jets fans, and specifically some of the remarkable breakdowns defensively. That Paul Maurice must be exceptionally frustrated to witness in those first, say, 4 or 5 goals there. The level of defensive breakdown, Munsey, were just remarkable.
Yeah, the five that went in before Steve Mason got pulled, I would probably say that, you know, 2 or 3 for sure were just plays where you kind of shake your head wondering, what was he thinking? And, you know, there was the one goal right off the faceoff. The second goal, you give them credit. Kadri was able to win the draw, and then on the secondary chance, get the puck over to Van Riemsdyk, and you know that's just a play. I think that the Leafs knew exactly what they're doing. And actually, I'm watching the highlights again here right now. They're on SportsCenter, and you know the defense pairing just kind of got twisted around a little bit. And you know, Byfuglien got caught chasing once on the delayed penalty, dragged. Who was it? Austin Matthews. This is great. I'm watching it right as we.
Is Buff chasing there though, Brian, or, yeah. Is he playing man? Like, are they in man there?
No, to me, he kind of just all of a sudden got focused on Austin Matthews, and he dragged them all the way out, and then there was nobody to kind of help out Steve Mason in the back end. So, you know, there were areas of the game where, again, they were good, and then there were areas where it was like, oof, you know, they'll have a chance to watch exactly what we're watching now on the highlights, and hopefully be able to rectify this by the time you. Or at least start thinking in the right manner when you get to Calgary on Saturday.
I know that not everything's going to be fixed in one game or in one training camp, but am I reading too much into Paul Maurice, you know, being very disappointed in the fact that they weren't, you know, at a better level than last night on opening night?
Yeah, I would say yes and no. Like I said earlier on, I think when you got to 3-0, to me the game was over, and then they really pushed offense. You look at some of the players last night, like Jacob Trouba was -4 at the end of the game, and to me, and by no means am I just putting this on Jacob Trouba because he was probably the most effective shooter, hitter, and block shot player in the night, but he was just trying to do too much. And I think everybody was trying to do too much based on the fact that they were on home ice, and again, they started chasing the game and kind of got away to what they had talked about a lot in the preseason of how he wanted their club to play when they were down, and it was kind of back to the old Jets. So, again, I think, you know, they'll learn from this one, and they'll move forward and get ready now for a really big road trip coming up starting this weekend in Calgary that won't get any easier going into Edmonton and then Vancouver to wrap it up next Thursday.
I heard some speculation on Paul Maurice having to make a decision and who starts in net against Calgary, but there's no doubt it's Steve Mason, right?
No. Yeah, and, you know, we've heard it so many times when he's made a goalie change that simply Steve had enough last night. And he wasn't getting much help. He would have liked a couple of those goals back for sure. And he even mentioned that on the postgame show last night. But, you know what, he'll put this behind him. And to me, that might be the biggest bonus that it was Steve Mason in net last night is he's been around the league for close to a decade. He's had some bad nights, and hopefully he'll be able just to put it behind him. And as he wakes up this morning, doesn't even worry about what happened last night. And I think that's the mentality that, you know, especially goaltenders, you have to have, is whether you've got the shutout or whether you've let 5 goals on 20 shots, what's done is done. It's kind of like playing golf. You got to go to your next shot and get ready and make sure you make that play to keep yourself going in the right direction.
We were on Press Row talking about that. Like, do you pull Steve Mason? Because not just because of the game, but he's new here and you're trying to get a relationship with the coaching staff. You want to help him out, like when things aren't his fault, but you also don't want to, you know, yank him from something he's fighting in, being that it's his first game here in the regular season.
Yeah, and I wouldn't have been surprised if, you know, the conversation maybe came up at some point if one of the D went over and said, hey, you know, let us know if you feel you've had enough or something like that. There is conversation between the coaches and players on situations like this, but I think when you look at the game, it's 5-0. You don't want all of a sudden a situation where, remember Patrick Waugh in his final game with Montreal, all of a sudden you get to 7, 8, 9, whatever the number was, and you just really embarrassed a player that's going to be a big key for you this year. So I think the coaching staff made the right move. Wade Flaherty would have known when he saw enough as well, and at the end of the day, it was probably a good time to get him out. And you look at the calendar here as well, guys, too, and there's a pretty good opportunity here that Steve Mason can run quite a few games with the way the schedule is laid out for this team, that, you know, it's not a fact where you were kind of curious as to how and when you could get Connor Hellebuck onto the ice. So he's got his feet wet now for a little bit of time, and now they can get back to the idea of running Steve Mason deep as their number one goalie.
Got to absolutely love the job Cheveldayoff did with Ehlers' contract.
Yeah, wasn't that a home run? Especially when you take a look at the guys that are coming up around the corner here. And it, you know, it was one of those things that just couldn't have started the day on a better note for the team, with all the excitement for game one and then knowing that you've got one of your most electrifying players on the ice that really wants to be here long term. So, yeah, it was a good day. And, you know, I thought Nick's game was all right last night, had a couple of shots on goal, but if there's one area that would stand out for me last night, was just seeing the return of Tyler Myers onto the ice last night. And we all know what he went through last year, both on and off the ice. And I thought big number 57 had a pretty good game for a game that was lost by 5 goals. So it was good for him to get back on the ice as well last night.
Brian Munns, Jets analyst, joining us here on the Big Show, TSN 1290. Speaking of the road trip that's coming up, Brian, and the team looking to bounce back, I was watching the end of the Battle of Alberta last night, and to steal a tweet from a colleague in Calgary, I thought Jágr looked invisible. Watching the Oilers, watching McDavid, the hat trick and just his speed, and then, of course, Jágr in Calgary, and Calgary's going to be upset going home. It doesn't get any easier on this upcoming road trip. It'll be real interesting to see how the club bounces back on this 3-game set.
Yeah, you don't really have a spot on the bingo card until you get to Vancouver on Thursday night, and which is really a game when you look in the Western Conference this year, whether it's the Canucks or the Colorado Avalanche, that the Jets need to make sure they win each and every one of those times that they go out and play. But, yeah, the Calgary game and the Edmonton game are ones that aren't going to be easy anywhere at all for any team going into Alberta. And, you know, we saw him in that preseason game, how good and how fast Connor McDavid is live. And will Jágr play? Well, nobody seems to know yet on Saturday night, but that's added a little bit more buzz for sure going into that game at the Saddle Dome for a team that I think Brad Treliving has built, you know, kind of like what Kevin Cheveldayoff is doing right now with the Winnipeg Jets. They've got a lot of really good young talent, but the Flames also have some size back there that are going to make it hard for each and every night.
The Jets practice at Bell MTS Iceplex today at noon. The other question we had on Press Row was, do you think there'll be any lineup changes going into Saturday?
No, I don't. Because at the end of the night, they need the penalty killers that were involved. So Nick Batan might have to be patient here for a few games. It might not surprise me that he gets into the Vancouver game or something like that. But I think Paul Maurice has a pretty good idea right now of what he wants this team to look like on the bottom six. And I think by no means can you blame last night's game on the bottom six to make a big change. It was, again, was just one of those nights where they did a lot of good things. They had 18 shots on the power play. They probably if it would have still been the preseason, would have had four or five goals away. That was going within the last couple of weeks. But, again, I think Frederik Andersen deserves a lot of credit for what he did for the Leafs last night, and I think we'll see the same lineup coming up this weekend when the road trip begins.
Good stuff, Mr. Munns. Thanks for this. We'll listen for you on the road trip.
Sounds good, boys.
Thanks,
good
Munsie.
Luck today.
And of course, Jetstream as well, daily here on TSN 1290. Good luck today. The Boston Pizza fan line will be open at 9 o'clock. How many tweets did you guys get about the phone line yesterday? I counted at one point seven to nine people just saying, good luck on the phones tomorrow.
Now, people are for sure in that mindset, but I think it's completely justified. Like these, as we said earlier, all of what we saw last night were concerns coming into the season. We're talked about all off season, and these what you saw last night, the level of defensive error, that just you don't push a button and that goes away. So I think there's great reason for concern.
And as always, all opinions welcome. So we'll do it at 9 o'clock for a full hour.
I thought Trevor Kidd said it best to us. I believe, unfortunately, it was only after the first period. He said, I'll be tuning at 6. I'll be getting up early. Right? Like that. It's the unfortunate reality of the situation, right? But that's...
It's not unfortunate. There's discussion.
There's a reason a hand can be hovering over the panic button right now. Because the Jets, unfortunately, lost in the literal worst nightmarish way possible.
I can't. You know what? That is a valid point. I can't imagine opening night going a worse way. You mentioned like a 5-4 loss or 4-2, but everything was on display yesterday. Once again, thanks to Brian Munns. Boss Pizza fan line open at 9 o'clock today for a full hour, of course. And don't forget, the Jets are practicing at Iceplex today at noon. If you want to go take that in as well, I know a lot of fans are always wondering when they can go out and catch a glimpse of practice. NHL news and notes are next on the Royal Sports Power Hour here on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
I'm ready for you wanted it back and we caved. TSN 1290 wants to better your basement with a host of cool add-ons. This time there are two caves to choose from, the Man Cave or the Mam Cave. A $500 men's Burton gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports. Pizza night for 10, courtesy of Boston Pizza. Two tickets to the upcoming UFC Fight Night, December 16th. At Bell MTS Place, a Winnipeg Jets guys night out, including two tickets to an upcoming 2017-18 home game at Bell MTS Place, and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey puck party, and a rink water nice rink in a box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. The Mam Cave has a $500 women's Burton gear shopping spree from Alter Ego Sports, a pizza party for 10 at Boston Pizza, two tickets to see Shania Twain's Now Tour May 13th at Bell MTS Place, a Winnipeg Jets girls night out, including two seats for an upcoming 2017-18 home game at Bell MTS Place, and a customized Winnipeg Jets hockey jersey as well. And a rink water, nice rink in a box, the industry standard for outdoor rink starter kits. Select your cave of choice online right now at tsn1290.ca and we'll randomly draw a winner for each prize package on Monday, October the 30th. The Big Show, the Royal Sports Power Hour, Jim Troy and Brandon, NHL news and notes time. Gentlemen, we've been delving into this Leafs debacle for the Jets, 7-2 at home. Boss Pizza fan line open at 9. The St. Louis Blues went into Pittsburgh last night. We all talked about the injuries, and it was banner-raising night. And if you haven't seen the rings, I tweeted out a couple days ago, you can go to the Pittsburgh Penguins Twitter. The rings are there. They got the rings. The banner went up.
Might be the nicest ever.
Oh, massive. And the Blues pull out a 5-4 overtime win. Mr. Shen with a goal and an assist. Parenko with a goal. Pietrangelo with the OT winner. Pretty impressive by the Blues, who are banged up, to go in on celebration night and pull out a win.
Yeah.
Change that prediction again there?
I would. I'm over them being out of the playoffs with their injuries.
First thing I thought
not.
Of, actually.
Yeah, I was thinking about it all last night as well, fellas. But they do look like who would have thought that if you tell me that St. Louis is going to beat Pittsburgh last night, what would you have thought the score would be? No one would think that they'd win a 5-4 type of a game. But yeah, they looked... And that's real bad news for the Jets, right? Ultimately, that's what it is. If the Blues can survive this time frame until they get some of that upper-end tier back, talent back, then the Jets are in all kinds of trouble because the Blues falling out and struggling early on here is absolutely key, I think, to the Jets making the playoffs.
Well, they're going to need one team, right? They're going to need one team to fall back a bit, and if it's not the Blues, you're beginning to run out of liable options at that point. I didn't think Matt Murray was very good. I think it was that simple. He probably would have liked at least two of the goals back, maybe three of them. But the Blues were – I was impressed. I didn't. They looked a lot better than I anticipated they would. And for Braden Schenn, he almost turned – went hero in the first, goat horns in the third with the – I don't know. I mean, I've seen that shut the brain off play before where he just throws the puck for some unknown reason and Pittsburgh plots two right away.
My God, what a giveaway that was.
That was
the giveaway of the year night one, right?
Exactly, right? Yeah. But they – yeah, give them credit. They look good. And Pietrangelo had a monster night. He's going to have a big year, especially with Shattenkirk out. A lot more responsibilities for him.
Flyers go into San Jose. I picked San Jose and Chicago to be one of the two teams out of the playoffs. They get a 5-3 win, and Mr. Wayne Simmonds with the Hattie last night. Two hat tricks in the National Hockey League last night.
Pretty impressive stuff, and we know someone that stayed up and watched all of it.
Yeah, choo-choo, all aboard the Wayne train. You might want to change the Blues predictions. I might want to change my Flyers out of the playoffs prediction. They look pretty good. And for Winnipeggers, you probably didn't get a chance to see Nolan Patrick in action. He is a lot better than I thought he would be early on.
He's asleep and no one's talking about him for the Calder at all, right? Like, you wonder.
He's really impressed. I don't know how many. I would be happy with 40 points from him this season. But he was on a line with Simmonds and Jordan Wheel and... He's a player. He's going to be real, real good. Might not win the Calder this year, but he's going to have a fun career in the NHL.
He might win it, though, and no one's talking about it.
Good,
right?
That is bizarre how no one is throwing his name in
there.
I
agree.
That is...
They got around it like it was aligned with Simmonds. They're putting him in a position to be successful.
Finally, last night on opening night, the Flames and the Oilers, I caught about the last 5 minutes of the second of this, and then the third period... Connor McDavid with the hat trick, Cam Talbot with the shutout. And it's real interesting because I thought Mike Smith played real well, but the second goal from Connor McDavid where he took the puck in the Flames' end, or his own end, sorry, and literally just went on a straight line from behind the Flames' blue or his own blue line to drive the net and couldn't get caught from a guy that was chasing him and a guy cutting off the angle, which I think was Giordano, and just went in and went top shelf on Smith. And Wayne Gretzky was in the building. They showed him, and he was talking about it 5 minutes after the goal, like on the Jumbotron. The Oilers, like the Flames, my point to this, didn't look bad. The Oilers just looked what you expect from them. Talbot with the shutout, McDavid with the hat trick.
That's one of the best decors in the NHL, huh? And like McDavid, like it's hard to, when you watch that speed specifically on the second goal, it's real hard to remind yourself. Like that looks, the difference of talent on the ice from him to everybody else is, to me, approaching impossible when you're talking the best the NHL has to offer. And then this guy who is just... unthinkably talented and wicked, stupid, fast.
The Flames don't have a weakness in their top four on defense. And on separate occasions, McDavid made them look like beer leaguers.
Yeah.
They just, and it's not even like they played it bad. Like, and McDavid stepped onto the ice for his first shift and immediately had a breakaway.
Yeah.
Like, just instant breakaway. He does things. The reason why he's so... must watch and so exciting and exhilarating is he's doing things we have never seen in the sport before. It's that simple. No human being has ever skated like that at that speed. And not only that, he skates faster than anybody else and he handles the puck as if he's standing still. So you can't stop him. Once he gets moving, it's over. Like he's the rare player that the only way you can stop McDavid is to slow him down at the other end of the rink.
Yeah.
Like you have to stop him before he even thinks about getting the puck, which I can't even imagine how a coaching staff and how NHL players on the ice you try and slow down someone like that before they even get into the neutral zone. Like it takes a coaching and a a discipline level that is it's just something you can't prepare for. You can't prepare for speed and skill like that.
The boys get that Monday night.
And that's my point. Like, take the goal away at the end. That speed you're talking about, that literally from one end to the other cannot be not only caught, but just angled off. Like, it's,
you can't even negotiate it. Yeah.
It's unbelievable. And then as we discussed last year, the most impressive thing I find about him is the skill he uses at that speed. I've seen guys with that kind of skill. I've seen guys with that kind of speed and not that skill. The skill he has at that speed is what is so impressive to me about Connor McDavid. That's around the NHL and your NHL news and notes. One final one, the Anaheim Ducks have signed defenseman Mr. Manson to a four-year deal worth $4.1 million a season. Some people are saying the Anaheim Ducks have the best defensive core in the league this year that nobody seems to be talking about. We'll see how that unfolds. To the NFL next, Jeff Reinbold joins the Big Show on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki with you. And this next segment is brought to you by Olympic Building Center. We're going to hear from Ed Tate at the bottom of the hour on the Blue Bombers. Some more from the Jets. We'll hear from Wheeler and Laine in the next segment. And one more from Paul Maurice. Josh Morrissey from the Winnipeg Jets is going to join us at 8:45. And then an hour of your phone calls on the Boston Pizza Fan Line. Talk some football now. Back to the NFL. And week 5 gets underway tonight with Tampa Bay hosting the New England Patriots. This is an interesting matchup.
Well, it's a critical matchup for the Patriots to get back on track as well, right? And we all know those Thursday night games when you're the visiting team and you lose that day of prep in the travel, the Patriots are in tough tonight.
It's going to be an interesting one. To help us tee up week 5 and talk some NFL, we welcome back into the program former CFL coach and, of course, a great NFL analyst on Sky Sports in the UK, Mr. Jeff Reinbold. Good morning, Coach. How are you?
I'm doing great, fellas. How are you doing?
We're doing well today, thank you. And we'll just start with what we're addressing. The 2-2 Patriots are in Tampa Bay to take on the 2-1 Buccaneers. Very interesting week 5 matchup for both these teams.
Huge one for the Patriots, particularly because, you know, I understand that Belichick's had seasons before where they've kind of come out of the gate slow, but they always were able to right the ship a little bit. But you look at this team historically, fellas, and I'm going to tell you something. They're giving up 400 yards a game. There has never been a Super Bowl champion give up this many yards the year after their championship since the New York Giants in the strike-shortened season. And guess who was the defensive coordinator of that unit? Bill Belichick. So it's one of those kind of deals where they've got to find some answers on defense real fast because the offense, as good as it is with Brady and Gronk and all those receivers, just can't get in a scoring match, you know, every weekend. You just can't win that way in the National Football League. So Matt Patricia and Belichick and all those guys on defense, they've got to get it straightened out, and they've got to get it straightened out fast. And Tampa Bay is a tough place to get it straightened out because they've got a bunch of receivers that can make plays. DeSean Jackson, you know, you look at their tight ends, Cameron Brate, they got O.J. Howard, you know, they are just loaded on offense. And now this week they get the muscle hamster back. Doug Martin comes back off suspension. And in preseason, he might have been the most impressive back in the NFL.
Coach, in the off season, you're seeing all these different quarterbacks and some of the depth charts and all the rest of it, and it just seemed inevitable that somebody somewhere would sign Colin Kaepernick, and then early in the season, guys going down and getting hurt, and now it's all the way to like Brandon Whedon and the likes, and with 3-4 guys getting pulled in, guys you never even heard of, and it's just like it seems as though, you know, those that even had any sort of hope that Colin Kaepernick might get another opportunity, at some point in time, you just kind of got to slump your shoulders and come to the realization that there's no chance in hell he's playing in the NFL ever again.
Well, you know, that's amazing, isn't it? When you look at it and you see some of the guys that are going to start games for teams in the National Football League, and, you know, you just cannot believe that a guy like Colin Kaepernick, who took a team to a Super Bowl, and granted, he's got his limitations, but there's certainly, like, and again, you mentioned Brandon Whedon, there's a whole litany of them that are playing right now that you look at them and you just go, Colin Kaepernick now, remember what he did in San Francisco. Remember what he did taking a team to within one pass of a Super Bowl championship, something that Dan Marino never did, you know, and a number of guys, you know, Andrew Luck's not done, you know, a lot of great quarterbacks that are playing or have played have never gotten that close.
Yeah, it's mind-boggling. As we go forward in Week 5, Coach, I'm looking at the Buffalo Bills at 3-1, in Cincinnati at 1-3, and maybe not just on this game, but what do you like about the Buffalo Bills? And they're leading that division with the New England Patriots in it.
I'm going to tell you something. Their general manager, Bean, who came from Carolina and brought Sean McDermott with them, they have a plan. They have a program. They know what they want. And a lot of it centers on, you know, Buffalo has always had talent on that roster. They, particularly on defense, they've had a lot of really good players there. But they never had the kind of discipline as a football team that allows you to win on a weekly basis. They could rise up and play extremely well sometimes, and then the next week just lay an egg. They put the offense on the shoulders of, you know, Shady McCoy, which is where it needs to be. Charles Clay made some plays for him last week. You know, Tyrod is a good enough quarterback to win games for you in the league as long as you're playing what we call complementary football, where the defense does their job, special teams hold up their end, and then offensively you're not asking him to do too much. I think that's the best coaching job right now that you look top to bottom in the National Football League. The question's going to be, and this is Troy can relate to this, once you've been down for a while and then all of a sudden you win and people start telling you how good you are and what a great job you're doing and you're going to win a division and all that noise from the outside starts to accumulate, it's going to be whether Sean can, you know, inoculate his guys from the success flu, because the success flu is going to get you real fast. And going into Cincinnati, Cincinnati's playing better. I think this is a real good test to see just how legit the Bills are. Right now, they're leading their division, and who in the world would have thought that the Bills would be leading the division after 4 weeks?
Coach, how impressed are you and maybe surprised with the Rams and specifically the offense and the job that Sean McVay as head coach has done?
You know, you look at the Rams, and two things jump out to me. Number one, guys, go all the way back to when Todd Gurley's at Georgia. Everybody knew he could be an I-formation tailback and, you know, be a great back. He had the ACL, but what McVay has done is he's unleashed him as a pass receiver, a threat out of the backfield. You got to go to 2000 and Steven Jackson to find a Rams running back that caught like he has out of the backfield. He had 95 yards last week out of the backfield as a receiver. So now they're using him to isolate against linebackers, you know, really, really good stuff scheme-wise. And they're giving their quarterback a chance. And there were a lot of questions about Goff after his first year, a lot of questions coming out of Cal. You know, he'd been played in a zone read offense, you know, and there's no full field reads. He didn't have progressions, never was in the huddle, never was under center. Well, under Sean McVay, they started to answer all those questions. And again, the Rams are another team that right now, again, key battle against the Seahawks, divisional game, a chance to really separate yourselves because Arizona's starting to show its age. And I really think that, you know, this is, again, one of those, you know, hallmark games or one of those games that we're going to look at when the season's over and say either the Rams were for real or the Rams were pretenders based upon what we're going to see in this game tonight. Because, you know, the Seahawks, as much as they've struggled on offense, they can still play defense.
You know, Jeff, not just with the Rams. It's happening with a lot of teams, but I'll focus in on the Rams. It's so intriguing to me to watch a young guy like McVay bring in a guy like Wade Phillips and how they work together, and just, I guess, the lack of egos of a young coach like that to be smart enough to bring in the experience of an older coach, and vice versa, the older coach, you know, willing to come in and work with a very young, dynamic new coach. Can you speak a little bit just about the dynamic of that and sort of how it, you know, the experience and the age and everything sort of works together with the younger guy being in charge?
Well, I think the greatest limiting factor to coaches and to players, frankly, is that little three-letter word you use, ego. When a guy thinks it's all about him and it's all, you know, it's because of him and all of that, then you're really on a slippery slope. And I think what's been amazing about McVay, and you got to know his history now. Remember, he grew up in the game. You know, he knows what it means to have quality assistants around you. He watched his father build, you know, the franchise in San Francisco. So when you have a chance to go out and get a guy like Wade Phillips, who has been there, done that, seen it, got the T-shirt, you know, I mean, the whole deal, and now he can come in and basically take the entire side of the defense and just take that off of your plate. Because remember now, McVay is also the offensive coordinator. So if he has to be spending time worrying about what the defense is doing and be the offensive coordinator and then take all of the other things that come with being a head coach, you know, that's a tall order. But Wade's given him the ability, and he's given Wade the freedom to go just take the defense, Wade. It's your baby. And, again, that's self-awareness. And self-awareness and, you know, confidence and being comfortable in your own skin, that doesn't have a maturation date, I guess is what you'd say. There's nothing come. It comes at different times with different people. With McVay, he's 31 years old, and he already gets it. With other coaches, some of them never get it. And that's why they, frankly, don't have the success that they should have. You know, even Belichick. Belichick understands he has to have players number one, and he has to have great assistant coaches around him number two, and he has to delegate and let those guys do their job. So that's really just, I guess, the recipe for success, if you will. But like I said, man, those three letters right there, EGO, they will get your butt quicker than anything when you start thinking it's all about you.
Good stuff, Coach. Good insight, as always. We appreciate it, and enjoy week 5.
I will, fellas. You too.
Thanks so much, Coach. Take care, man. Mahalo.
All right, Troy. Oh, aloha.
This segment was a presentation of Olympic Building Center. Visit their design center today or online at olympicbuildingcenter.ca. Build with confidence. Back to the Jets. We hear more from Maurice, Captain Blake Wheeler, and Mr. Patrick Laine when we come back to the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Boss Pizza fan line open at 9. Mr. Ed Tate on the Blue Bombers at 8:30. Josh Morrissey, defenseman of the Winnipeg Jets, going to join us at 8:45 live on the Big Show. Back to the game last night, 7-2 loss for the Jets at home to the Toronto Maple Leafs. They'll practice today at the Iceplex, Bell MTS Iceplex at noon, and then, of course, head out on a 3-game road trip to continue the start of the season. Last night, 7-2 loss. Head coach Paul Maurice was asked what the most disappointing problem was.
Yeah, I think we did it to ourselves on some of them. You know, the third goal is a reasonably easy read to make if you're thinking about defending at that point, but we were thinking about it's 2-1, let's get it back as fast as we can, and that is a bit of a holdover concept, and that's how you get in trouble, right? Relax, patience. We blew the zone on that and got in real trouble with it.
Agree? I personally, and this is my own opinion, I thought he nailed what the issues were last night. From being how it fell apart to saying all the issues when Sarah Orleski asked him what are, you know, some of the issues that have plagued this team, and he goes, well, all of them were on display. All the issues we've had that plagued this team were on display last night. And then to that, the most disappointing problem was, like, goal 3, an easy read.
Yeah, and, like, for Pete's sake, I just don't understand how a team that comes into camp with apparently a you know, take cranking it up a step or two regarding mindset and understanding as to where they fit in for into the NHL. They have profound understanding in their weaknesses and are doing things to strengthen them going forward. And then you come into this game, and I don't care if there's early struggle that you're not able to, you know, hit the twine behind Anderson. I don't care about that. That happens all the time. But to have the level of breakdown that we witnessed on any of the first five goals, and there was incredible breakdown defensively on all five of those first five goals, how does that happen? How does it happen when, as a group, you're at home, you're coming in to make a statement against an up-and-coming big-time team in the Toronto Maple Leafs? And what's sad about last night, really sad to me, was it wasn't the brilliance of the Maple Leafs as to why they specifically just stick into those five goals, but ultimately the seven goals. It wasn't the brilliance of the Maple Leafs. It was the pathetic overall defensive performance by a team that is supposed to be locked and loaded and focusing in on their defensive play. How the hell does that happen? Yeah, it's only the first game, but this is exactly what is the concern of everyone who's playing, coaches, management, and all the fans of the Jets. How does that unfold to the degree that it did last night? That is devastating and I think incredible reason for concern.
And the Maple Leafs are a hell of a hockey team. They're really good, which makes it all the more scarier because the Jets had 16 minutes of 5-on-4 time.
Yeah.
And so what if Toronto only takes four penalties in that game? What's the score in the hockey? You know what I mean?
Yeah.
Like, I think the Jets were fortunate that it didn't end up worse, that they didn't creep towards kicking a field goal after getting the touchdown last night. So it's just real frustrating watching the same things over and over again. And to me, there's going to be warts early on in the season for most teams. There's going to be hiccups. And I don't think you should expect perfection. But I think the most troubling part for me is there was no defensive structure last night. There was nothing for this team to lean back, to fall back on and say, look, we might not have it tonight. Let's protect the house. Let's protect home plate. We can fall back on kind of what we know best. There was none of that. And that, to me, is the most concerning thing, even though it is game one of 82.
Here's Captain Blake Wheeler on the game last night.
Well, yeah, I mean, we had a number of power plays, and it was doing everything but scoring. And then, you know, took a penalty and just kind of let a greasy one in. And from there, you know, you blink and it's 3-0. And, you know, we just weren't able to dig our way out of it.
Here's Mr. Patrick Laine on the game last night, the 7-2 loss to Toronto.
Just embarrassing, 7-2, home opener. It wasn't the way that we wanted to start the season, but now it's done. And, well, that's good news that we have still 81 games left and just have to be a lot better.
And, hey, man, you're put right to the test, right? Now you go up against a Calgary team that was just kind of embarrassed by Edmonton, and then you go up against this juggernaut in Edmonton that and plus what stings a little bit, I suppose, is, you know, the Jets, an up-and-coming team with all kinds of hype and just a real good positive feel coming in, similar to Toronto and Edmonton, and Toronto answers the bell with it, Edmonton answers the bell with it, and the Jets, you know, this was diarrhea down your leg is what the Jets did last night. It was as ugly and as bad as it could be. And how you respond to this, the Winnipeg Jets could be 0-3 real quick. And then you're knocking on the door of, oh boy, right now you're trying to catch things. And we all know how critical the first 10, 15 games are in sort of setting yourself and aligning where you're going to be within the division. Things could go off the rails in a hurry here.
And I'll buy the it's just one game to an extent, but if it turns into it's just three games,
yep,
after Monday, then it's full-fledged panic mode at that point. Honestly, it would be.
Is that the leeway? That's one of the questions I started the show with, is what your leeway? I said 10 to 15, maybe 10 to 12. Like, if what we saw last night is still there in 10 to 15 games, I don't know what's going to happen. But, like, if it improves or whatever, but that's my leeway for it. What's your guys' leeway?
If what unfolded last night repeats itself for a 10 or 15 game stretch, people would be standing with torches and pitchforks outside of the MTS.
Because they'll be 0-10.
Yeah.
How in the world do you win a game playing like that? So that's mind 10 games. They can't play the next two games like that, or they're going to be in a world of
hurt. That's why I don't expect it to continue. Like I honestly don't, and I know some fans might go, well, how do you not? Well, I just don't. I don't think that the guys in that room and the professionalism that they have is going to have a.
You got to split one of.
It
the
was
next,
awful. Don't get me wrong, team. But I think that I mean Calgary Edmonton is going to be real tough.
You got to split that. You got to grab at least one,
and then you come home. But I'm just wondering what your leeway with is, just to see. Like they might not beat Edmonton. But I don't think they'll lose in this fashion.
Yeah,
that's what I expect.
And that's what's important. Yeah. That last night doesn't repeat it. Like the ugliness of last night cannot repeat itself.
We'll find out from you what you think on the Boss Pizza fan line. An hour of your calls coming up at 9 o'clock at 780-1290. You can also text your opinions to 1290-90. And Josh Morrissey from the Winnipeg Jets is going to delve into this with us the upcoming road trip. They do practice today at Bell MTS Iceplex at noon if you want to go take that in with the Jets. Up next, so we're going to get back to the Bombers. They host the Hamilton Tiger Cats tomorrow night. We have Moose Hockey tomorrow night as they kick off the regular season, as well as Minook Denture Blue Bomber game day. Big day for sports once again tomorrow on TSN 1290. But up next, we talk blue and gold with Mr. Ed Tate on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, Jim Tilt, Troy Westwood, Brandon Ruwicki, a half an hour away from your phone calls on the Boston Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Tomorrow night, Minook Denture Blue Bomber game day starts at 5:30 and goes right until kickoff at Investors Group Field when the Bombers host the Tiger Cats. Then we'll join Manitoba Moose Hockey in progress as they visit the Grand Rapids Griffins to kick off their season. Manitoba Moose post-game show goes at 8:45 tomorrow night. And then, of course, we'll join back in with the Minook Denture Blue Bomber game day coverage halftime. And to wrap it up with Darren Bombing, Mr. Troy Westwood, and Chris Walby. So big day of sports tomorrow night. We'll hear from Josh Morrissey, defenseman of the Winnipeg Jets, going to join us in our next segment too. But right now we're going to talk some more blue and gold in the CFL with Mr. Ed Tate from BlueBombers.com. And lots of news around the Bombers this week, including Chris Randall being named a top performer and some new faces in practice. Ed, welcome back to the program. How are you today?
I'm fantastic, fellas. How are you?
Doing very well. And good news. Not only was Chris Randall named a top performer for his game against Edmonton, but Maurice Leggett looks healthy enough to go this weekend. Is that right?
Yeah, I guess we'll get the confirmation today. He's been kind of, like, the practices haven't been too intense this week. He's been in and out a little bit. I expect him to play. He kind of hinted the other day that he expected to play, but until we see the depth chart, which will probably come out in the next hour or so, you never assume anything. And even then, sometimes these guys play tricks with who's in the lineup. But I would expect that Mo Leggett will be back in.
You got a real neat piece that sort of dives into some of the newcomers, specifically on the defensive side of the ball, just revealing a little bit more of who they are as young men. And so maybe just ask you about a couple of them, and maybe starting off with a guy who's been really impressive in Jackson Jeffcoat.
Yeah, Troy, it's interesting that the whole piece is kind of wrapped around a third of their defense now is being their starters are young guys that we wouldn't have really known who they were when camp started. And Jackson Jeffcoat's one of them. You know, everybody was impressed with him during the preseason, and he was getting a lot of work even before Jamal Westerman was hurt. And then when Westerman went down, Jeffcoat's been really good, a very solid player. I think he wants more from himself, and I think as he gets more comfortable in the defense and what his assignments are, he'll get even better. And I think the same applies to Brandon Alexander and Brian Walker and Javan Santos-Knox. So there's some, I keep saying this, I see this talent on defense, and if they could ever figure out how to stop those explosion plays, they might have something.
A lot of new faces brought in this week, Ed, to the roster as well, including a couple new quarterbacks. Tell us about that, and is this the time of the season where I guess every CFL team's doing that?
Yeah, you're allowed to expand your practice roster up to 15 players, so another 5 from the 10 if you want, from for a month period anytime after September 1st. So the Bombers have opted to start their expansion right about now, and they've got a month to evaluate these guys. But it's kind of weird because essentially what happens at practice is that all these other guys, the regulars, are getting their work, and you've got a bunch of new faces just kind of standing around watching, which is what happened yesterday. And then after practice, the quarterbacks are throwing passes to some of the reserve receivers and so on. And that's basically the only way you get to evaluate these guys, because you can't be stealing reps away from your regulars. So it's kind of interesting. I think what Mike O'Shea said yesterday is that, you know, you just want to get a look at, you do the eyeball test with these guys and then see how quickly they can pick things up. But it's more just to see if they, you know, they know what they're doing and whether they're worthy of a training camp invite for next year. I would be shocked if any of these guys got into the lineup unless there was an outbreak of malaria or something.
Eddie, I might verbalize to or struggle to verbalize my thought here, but I think you'll know what I'm talking about, and maybe other folks that have, you know, played in team sports would know what I mean here. But I thought the Bombers were in a tough spot to go into Edmonton and go win a game against a team that had dropped 5 in a row, who were at home. I didn't know if they were there yet as a team to go into a situation like that and snatch a victory. But it looks like this team, you know, the way teams sort of grow, and it's almost like you reach a different tier when you start to win, where you've established yourself and there's just an absolute sort of a growth, or you reach a new level of understanding as to what you are as a team and where you fit in. Do you feel that the team is there now? We're in that sort of upper echelon of the CFL. They know damn well they belong, and that there's a growth that's happened here?
I really do, Troy. I think that's a good question, because I was thinking about that before the game in Edmonton on the weekend, is that, man, you kind of think, boy, this would be a big win, but Edmonton, all those weapons on offense, can they, you know, they've already lost 5 in a row, would it be 6? Mike Riley's so good, and great defensive line, you know, and so you have all these doubts about the Bombers and whether they can pull it off, and then they do, and you start to think, well, maybe we're the only ones second-guessing these guys and looking at the flaws. They don't seem to think that way, and to me, it's a direct contrast to the way this team was last year when they went into Edmonton at the end of July, when Matt Nichols made his first start and Taylor Loeffler and Travis Bond also made their first starts. There was still some, you know, that team was 1-4, and there was all this uncertainty and negativity swirling around. Well, they're on a 20-6 run since then, and I think a guy like Jackson Jeffcoat, who we were talking about earlier, when I was talking to him yesterday, he said, he talked about the expectations that this team has to win every week. And I don't think that was there at this time last year. I think it was growing. And I think it is to the point now where these guys think they're elite. Now, of course, you know, everybody's looking at Calgary and that game at the end of the year. We'll see if it means anything. But that's clearly what they've got to get. That's the next step for this franchise, is to win a playoff game, get a home playoff game, win a home playoff game, and then see if you can knock off Calgary. But I do see an awful lot of growth with this bunch.
This might be the worst sports analogy ever, Ed, but it's almost like trying to get out of that friend zone to start a relationship. It's like that. It is. It's like that apprehension to buy in that this is a winner, given the history of what's gone on.
Yeah, and you know what's interesting about that, Jim, is that a lot of there's so much turnover in a CFL team from year to year. So we look at the team that was here last year, and, you know, it's Andrew Harris, Matt Nichols, Clarence Denmark, Darvin Adams, all the regular guys. But a lot of the guys that are playing right now, especially on defense, as we talked about earlier, are new guys. So they parachute into a situation where this winning culture has already been kind of developed, and they're not coming into a situation like it was in 2013, when the team, you know, there was a revolving door on the, you know, the locker room. So I think it's weird how it takes time, but I think the culture has changed, and now there's a buy-in, and that the new guys that do come in have to buy in, because that's just the way it's done around there.
It's a real strange situation with Zach Collaros here. I haven't heard a peep from him in weeks now. You got the highest paid guy in the CFL just sitting quietly and almost as if he's being shunned in some way by the new organization of coaching staff and stuff. Will you be shocked if Zach Collaros plays another snap for this team?
Yeah, it's really interesting. The CFL trade deadline's next week, and I'm not sure if anybody would bite on that with Zach Collaros. As you said, Troy, he's the highest-paid guy in the league, and I think he's on a 12-game losing streak or something awful like that. Might even be worse. But, you know, there's a lot of people in this league that still think he can play, but it is really bizarre how quickly it deteriorated for him. And then you turn to Jeremiah Mazzoli and credit him for, you know, running June Jones's offense and using his legs and all his physical skills. But I don't think that, you know, if you were to rate quarterbacks in this league at the start of this year, Mazzoli would have been far behind Zach Collaros in terms of the talent level. So I don't know. It's a weird story. Again, credit Mazzoli for what he's been able to do, because they look like a different team since he took over on Labor Day. But what the future holds for Zach Collaros is very interesting, because there are a couple teams in this league that could use some quarterback help, and you wonder if they might bite on this and Hamilton might move him.
Ed Tate of BlueBombers.com joining us on the Big Show this morning, 40 minutes past the hour, talking about the battle coming up between the Tiger Cats and the Bombers at IGF tomorrow night at 7:30. A lot of criticism, and rightfully so, over the changes and some of the decisions they made in Hamilton. But I believe, Ed, and I'm wondering your opinion on it, it's also fair to say that June Jones has had an impact on this team. And you know, it's not enough, I think, to get him into the postseason, but there has been some difference made under June Jones.
Yeah, and you wonder if some of it, Jim, isn't that sort of stereotypical thing about just a fresh voice. You see it in hockey and baseball, football, all those sports, where I wonder if Kent Dawson can grate on you. He's just got a certain style where he's in your face all the time, and it's very intense. And you see June Jones on the sideline, and he looks like he's going for a Sunday stroll sort of thing. And maybe that team just needed to have a different voice. You know, even when you see him on the sidelines, he's got a play sheet that's just looks like it's written on the back of a folder, whereas Kent Dawson would have like the telephone book kind of play sheet. So maybe just stripping things down, being a little bit simpler and having a calmer voice has helped them, because they do look like a different team with him. Now, having said that, there was a couple game times this year, I think he cost them a game in Saskatchewan where he decided to throw on third and one from the one on the final play of the game, which
right.
Left a lot of people scratching their head. But I think he has made a positive impact on that team.
Eddie, I don't know if there's much of a comment here, but the pass interference that happened in the Argos Ticats game, the fumble that Simone Lawrence batted out of bounds, it wasn't called a Hamilton ball, just the level of error from an officiating standpoint in that game. And I just find it funny as the Dickens, although I'm trying hard not to giggle at this league that I love, where the CFL declined to comment on the officiating in that game.
how can the league decline
to comment on it?
I think they've done the apology thing in the past with Hamilton, and maybe they just know that people in Hamilton are tired of hearing it. Yeah. It's unfortunate. I think there's a structure in place to start getting the calls right, but it doesn't seem to be that everybody's on the same page yet, and that, I don't know if that's more training. You know, you guys could be open up the phone lines and we could talk about this all day, right? People would be calling in about what's wrong and how to fix it. We've been talking about this for decades now. I think they do have some things in place. It's just a matter of kind of fine-tuning it further, and people get tired of hearing that. But, you know, I do watch the NFL quite a bit, and they're making mistakes down there too. I'm not saying that I think people will say that there's a big difference between the two leagues and the officiating, and part of it is that there's only four games a week in the CFL and the mistakes get more magnified.
It's a good thing, Ed, but you'll always be in our friend zone. Thanks for doing this.
That's a good analogy, Jim. I don't really get it, but it's a good analogy.
Thanks, Ed. Take care.
It's almost like it was a six pack. It's weird. It didn't make sense. Thanks, Ed. We appreciate it. BlueBombers.com is where you read his fine work. Of course, Manuk Dencher, Blue Bomber Game Day on the air, 5:30 tomorrow night to tee up the Bombers and the Tiger Cats on TSN 1290. Josh Morrissey of the Winnipeg Jets joins us next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Welcome back to The Big Show. 49 minutes past the hour. The Boss Pizza fan line will be open for an hour of your phone calls at 9 o'clock today. And with the Jets heading out on the road, we do have a couple events going on at Bell MTS Place. We have tickets to give away. We'll do that as well. All to come. Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki with you on the show. Continue to delve into the 7-2 loss at home for the Winnipeg Jets to the Toronto Maple Leafs to kick off the season. And very happy to welcome in defenseman Josh Morrissey to the program. Good morning, Josh. Did the sun come out this morning for you?
Yeah, good morning. Thanks for having me. And by the looks of it, I did. So obviously that's a better start to today.
Just give us your thoughts on the game last night and how everything sort of fell away from you guys after that first 15 minutes.
Yeah, well, I mean, I thought we came out really strong. You know, obviously everyone was amped up and you know, the first 15, I thought we came out, like I said, really strong. But after that, you know, started to get away from our game, and obviously it got away from us and ended up being you know, embarrassing and something that, you know, obviously, you never want to happen, especially in the first game of the year and against a team that, you know, is a pretty good rival. So, it was disappointing. But like you said, obviously now, we'll go to the rink today. We'll watch, video, learn from it. And you know, obviously our mindset shifts to the weekend and to our road trip here.
Josh, just quickly congratulate you on a fantastic year last year and wishing you certainly similar or an even better success this year. I want to ask you, when we're breaking down games and watching them and discussing them with fans and such, sometimes it's hard to figure out if you guys are, you know, mostly dedicated or slipping in and out of man or zone coverage. Can you, as much as you can, please share with us typically what kind of defensive structure you are in the defensive zone?
Yeah, well, thank you for that as well. It kind of depends on scenarios. Obviously, you know, when the puck goes maybe to the point or something like that, we're looking for some man coverage lockouts at the front of the net. But then there are times where you are in a little bit more of a zone, I guess, with some switches that have to take place again, and then it becomes man. So it just sort of depends, I guess, if you were looking at last night's game. You know, there was a few errors, obviously, on a couple of goals where guys missed their coverage. You know, obviously, even from the bench, it's tough to see in real time exactly the mistake that happened. So today, obviously, we'll be at the rink and we'll go over all the goals against and see you know, sort of where we went wrong on coverages and you know, where we can improve. Obviously, it's a long year, so we want to keep getting better every day as a team. And after last night, obviously, we know there's a lot of room to improve.
I'm sure you feel bad for Steve Mason in his debut, but I'm wondering just how long it takes to sort of get to know a guy in communication between the defenseman and a goalie with Steve and getting started with a new face in the team in the net.
Well, I mean, I think honestly, you know, as far as the communication goes, we have our calls. We have practice a lot in, you know, with, you know, D-goalie communication, D-goalie handoffs and breakouts. And so it's come pretty quickly, in my opinion, as far as understanding sort of how Steve likes to play the puck, how D-men come back into their zone. Some guys like to come sort of closer to him. Some guys fade away from him. It just sort of depends. Guys look different when they're opening up for a pass. So, you know, there's been some trial and error in practice, but I'd say by now, you know, guys and Steve is obviously a great puck handler, and And guys are good enough players that by this point, starting the year, everyone should be on the same page. And I think we are as far as those goalie D situations go. And obviously for Mace last night, I mean, you feel bad for him as a defenseman, especially you know, his first game at home. I don't think there is a lot he could do on any of those. And that's where we will clean that up and give him more support going forward.
Josh, fans and people that love the game obviously love watching the games, and if they can catch a practice, it's always a cool thing to catch as well. But maybe one of the neatest things that fans can gain information or knowledge of is some of the inner workings in locker rooms and some of the fun that is had within locker rooms. Going back to last year, your first year, and can you maybe, and looking like, a personality as big and gregarious as a Dustin Byfuglien, might you have a funny story, a funny Byfuglien story that you can share with us from inside the locker room?
Well, I mean, obviously Buff's, he loves the game, and he's full of energy, plays with a ton of energy, and other guys really feed off that. I know I feed off that, especially, when I first started playing at the start of last year, just such a presence on the ice. I think it was probably about 10 games into the season maybe not even. At that point I was comfortable, but you're still pretty nervous trying to, not make a mistake, but you are a little bit nervous still. You're young in your career. I remember coming off the ice probably a little bit quicker in a shift than the normal shift length. And I remember hearing him just yell at me as I was sort of skating towards the bench to stay out on the ice, kid. And we're not changing yet kind of thing. Obviously with the minutes Buff plays, he's not afraid to do that. So that kind of stuff is just sort of how he is. I mean, he communicates on the ice and just has a ton of fun playing. From that to taking my helmet away before my first game and hiding it somewhere, so I had to do the rookie lap with no helmet on. I mean, those are the type of things that he does and does pretty regularly that make guys feel comfortable and keep it light in the locker room.
I'm not trying to talk you up, Josh, but with a flow like that, you could consider going helmetless warm-ups anyway. It's a good flow out there. Josh Morrissey, Winnipeg Jets defenseman, joining us on the Big Show today. The Jets practice at MTS Iceplex today. As Josh said, they'll break down last night's 7-2 loss, head out on the road. Before we let you go, Josh, I know part of this road trip, you guys want to right the ship, but you're also going back to your hometown, and you're facing Jaromir Jagr. Did you ever think that would happen again in your hometown?
Well, it's always fun going to play at home, and it's exciting for me playing in the arena that for example, I young kids coming to watch us at the MTS Center obviously dream of playing in the MTS Center in the NHL at one point. So for me, doing that in the Saddle Dome is very exciting and in front of my family. But I know from talking to some of my friends back home and people I know that are. I try to convert them to Jets fans, but I think some of them are still pretty loyal to the Flames and they're pretty excited about having Jagr there. And obviously for me, I've been watching him since I started watching hockey. So I got to play him a little bit last year when he was in Florida. It'll be cool, I guess, just add some more hype to their home opener. For us, we need to go on this road trip and like you say, try to right the ship, but do it one game at a time. And I guess we'll try and do what Toronto did to us last night in Calgary.
Great stuff, Josh. We really appreciate you taking the time and your insight. Thanks for doing this and have a good road trip.
Awesome. Thank you very much.
Thanks, Josh. Good luck in Calgary, man.
Josh Morrissey of the Winnipeg Jets, and now it's up to you. Boss Pizza fan line wide open, 780-1290, next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and TSN1290.ca and the Boston Pizza Fan Line wide open, 780-1290 with Jim Tolf, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki. As expected, lots of calls. Let's get to a Mucker. You're kicking us off today on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Hey, guys. Great to be back with the Jets in Winnipeg. Every fall, I'm always thankful that that we have the NHL in Winnipeg, and seeing the Toronto Maple Leafs in our backyard is always a blessing. And I've always been a positive guy, but I got to turn to the word diarrhea that was used, diarrhea on the leg, if I'm not mistaken. And that's my question when it comes to goaltending. So everyone in the Big Apple is so excited about Pavlik. They have a backup goalie for Lundqvist that is going to take them to the Stanley Cup. Do you think the writing was on the wall at the end of our third period yesterday when they pulled Mason? Do you guys think that we are going to be up against not just a similar goaltender situation, but a similar team? Like, looking at all the players on the ice, it just seems like last year is back. Yeah, maybe we'll get to the playoffs, but even if we do, I'm not sure if you'd call Mason an all-star goaltender that would be able to take us deep into the playoffs.
Where in the world did you ever hear that they're geeked in having Andre Pavlik as the backup when last year Antti Raanta was their backup?
I lived in New York, so I followed some of their...
Read that too, actually.
Yeah. They're pretty excited about having him. I don't know why. I think they're mistaken.
They just lost a backup goalie that went 922, 919, and 936 the last 3 years. They better prepare for some heartache. Antti Raanta is a stud. But you know what? Like, I don't know. It sounded like Mucker is down there on Mason last night. For Pete's sake, I'd be more than happy to engage in those first five goals. Maybe and even the goal off the faceoff there, it ends up being that Morrissey with a pretty darn good screen and a bit of a deflection off the shot as well. So to me, there wasn't a weak goal in the five that he surrendered. I could not believe that some people were knocking and hacking on Steve Mason's game last night.
I don't think it was Mason's fault at all. But the fifth one, what do you think of the fifth one? Like that shot from the side. I mean, I've said this for years. Doesn't matter what goalie's in there, this team has to be better defensively. A better goalie will definitely help you with that. But I think last night was another example of, regardless who's in the net, they have to shore that up.
Yeah, I've never been a big believer of a team's defense playing a role in a goalie having poor numbers. I'm starting to revisit that theory, though. Because was Mason spectacular last night? No. Was he good? It's tough for me to say that also, but kind of like Troy touched on.
The fifth goal is the only questionable one.
Yeah, at that point, who cares? If you want to blame the fifth one, I'm okay with that. But the first four,
we're all just brutal.
Like he'd like a save on the breakaway, but it's a breakaway / 2-on-1, and Marleau makes a great move. Once again, Mason's biggest flaw was revealed, where he can't stop that backdoor tapping into the empty net. If that's his flaw, he's got to work on that. But a deflection goal on the faceoff one, and then on the first goal, he makes three or four stops before he gets plowed into the net, and Kadri eventually bangs one in. So it's not the debut you wanted, but I'm not going to blame the goaltending on Mason, or even when Hellebuck went in afterwards, because the first goal Hellebuck gave up. What happened? Yeah, same as the first one. It's 2, 3, 4 saves, and eventually someone's going to find a way to bang one in if you don't clear out the rebound.
And to me, Maurice nailed it. He said there wasn't one where you sit there and go, oh my God, what was he doing? There wasn't one of those. And to your point, Mucker, I don't think they – obviously they want to win the Stanley Cup, but I don't think Mason was brought in to be the Stanley Cup winner. He's brought in to help him take that next step, get into the playoffs, and also push Connor Hellebuck to continue to get better too. That's what I think it is. I don't know. I mean, I think little steps. You obviously want to win the Stanley Cup, but I don't know of anybody who says, oh, Mason's here to win them the Stanley Cup. I think he's here to help him get to that next step and get in the playoffs, and then who knows. But that's a long way away. so far. Thanks for the call, Mucker. Good stuff. Greg, you're on the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Go ahead.
Good morning. I thought the Leafs played a pretty well perfect hockey game. They were so good defensively, and every time they had a chance for a goal, they buried it. And if the Jets are going to beat the Leafs in that game, the Jets got to play a perfect hockey game. So it's not surprising that they lost 7-2 against the effort of the Leafs. But a couple of things. I thought the Jets were very out of sorts. There didn't seem to be much chemistry between the lines. No physical presence. I mean, for a home opener against the Leafs, I thought there'd be I'm not saying that I wanted to see a fight, but I thought there'd be at least some more physicality from the Jets in front of the the Winnipeg fans. So, and the other thing too, I thought the question I've always wondered with Line A is Line A a one trick pony? I mean, if the Jets and Line A think that he can stand at the top of the circle all season long and wait to get good looks. Because if that's not happening, what type of player is he going to be? I don't see Line A being a very physical player. Defensively, he's not that good. When he's not in a scoring position, he seems to be quite weak on the puck and almost like an Ovechkin type, but Ovechkin has that physicality aspect to his game if he's not scoring. So, it could be, the good news, there's 81 games left. The bad news, there's 81 games left. So I'm hoping that we can see this turn around. So thanks, guys.
Thanks for the call, Greg.
I strongly disagree. That Line is weak on the puck, I think that's crazy talk. Last year, he's 18 years old, man. I think he's incredible on the puck, especially with his age. And to say he's weak defensively, I think that's wrong as well. There were two or three breathtaking plays Patrick Laine made yesterday where you had to, like, you see it out in the ice and you had to look at the people sitting beside you like, hold, did you see that? And where he was able to create some space and get a shot away. And hey, man, and the whole Laine Island thing, Ovechkin, Stamkos, those guys have made a living there, and his shot is wicked enough that he's going to make a name for himself if he already hasn't in that spot. But I think his game is much more well-rounded than Greg was giving him credit
for.
And
how did he get on the board last night? Beautiful play, holding onto the puck, and then a backhand sauce through three sticks onto Scheifele's tape. Like he's not a one-trick pony. Hmm. And it's hard to say that because you look at everyone just looks shot, the shot, the shot. And what does everyone say when they talk about it, too? It's the best shot I've ever seen. But he is a super, super effective playmaker and a real, real strong passer.
I said this last year on the program, and everybody, you said the shot and everything else. The thing that stood out to me last year was his backhand accuracy with passes. Like, he can go board to board almost, tape to tape with a backhand. It's very impressive. Thanks for the call, Greg. I will say this last night. I thought the Maple Leafs penalty kill was really good. Not only taking Line A away, but how they played. And I was sitting beside a former NHLer, and he actually said, he goes, their penalty kill is really good. Just the little things of how they can tap pucks to each other. And, like, they're making a play to stop a pass or get in the way, but their little intricacies of their penalty kill of where they're just their sync and chemistry there amongst the guys on it, that they can actually make plays to each other when you're killing a penalty, he said, is very impressive.
I saw you sitting beside Rick Ralph. He didn't play in the NHL, bro. But hey, man.
Look to the left.
There was an incredible difference between those penalty kills. One was aggressive, like Toronto would get out and suffocate and take space away right away, and the Jets was the opposite of that. Right, and I heard Paul Maurice before the game talk about how the sort of the passive low collapse, and they're waiting to clear rebounds. I'm that's what I heard him describe it as, that they're in that tight space. A shot comes, jump on the rebound, act quickly to the rebound. I thought one of the most, maybe the biggest contrast of the game last night was the aggressiveness of Toronto on the penalty kill compared to what the Jets brought to the table in that passive small little box that they get into.
Yeah, and the thing that leads to that is, and Toronto's penalty kill was flawless. They were outstanding, just real, real good. But with the way the Jets play the penalty kill, watch how close the Leafs were to each other and to the net. Because the Jets on their power play, you had Buffalo and straddling right on the blue line, Wheeler and Line A closer to the boards. But when the Leafs had the puck on their power play, they're right in, right around home plate. Because why not?
Because
you're not out there being aggressive and forcing us. So hey, we'll close the space and we'll allow, if you want to give us, as close to the net as possible, we'll take it. And it showed in Toronto's ability to just create dangerous scoring chance after scoring chance on their limited power play time.
To me, the PK is in a real precarious
spot, though. Like Kulikov was too aggressive on that and left that open there. So, but that I thought their penalty kill looked real good for Toronto. Thanks for the call, Greg. We want to get to more of the calls, so we'll move along here. Ty, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Playoffs. I can't believe it. I'm sorry. I pressed the panic button. I admit it. I pressed the panic button, and it dialed TSN 1290. Now, in the preseason, I kept my hand off the panic button. After those preseason games, when we dressed our starters and we played scrubs and lost, I said, no, no, it's preseason, nothing to worry. Then I got in. It's the opening game. I'm not going to overreact over the opening game, but I have deja vu. That looked like last year. We're supposed to be improved defensively. And I saw some really rough shot defensive mistakes that brought me back to last year. Except last year, we were really competitive with the Maple Leafs. Last night, we were not. We lost 7-2. And don't get me that it doesn't go on Mason. You know what? Anderson had just as many difficult shots. There were deflections. There were close in. He made the stops. Mason didn't. First of all, we got to solve it. You're right. That back door play, solve it. Dress two goalies. One for one half of the net, one for the other. Solve the back door play. That's the race. But you know what? We got to improve. If we're looking for playoffs, we cannot have a repeat of last year. And I didn't see any energy out there. Yeah, we had control for 15 minutes. Maple Leafs pop one goal, and boom, we're back to too aggressive. Defensive play sucks, and we lose 7-2. My biggest concern is, we almost had a full period of power play, and we got zero. We can't win many games by doing that. You know what, boys? It's a long season. It's one game out of 82. Nothing wrong with going 81-1. After today, we got Calgary. Anyways, boys, just I'd like to see a little bit more improvement. And you know what? Last night I heard that the guys were saying you don't change the lineup. After a dismal showing like that, I think you got to shake something up. I know it's only game two, but you got to do something. You got to change something up in that chemistry because I don't want to repeat of last year. Anyways, boys, I'm out of here. Always a great day. It's sunny out. And you know what? Calgary's a win, I see.
Thanks for the call, Ty. Always good to be on the speed dial here at TSN 1290, even if it is the panic button speed dial. We appreciate the call. Gord, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, Gord. Hi, Gord. Are you still there, Gord? All right, we'll take a break. We'll come back. Hang on the phone lines. We'll get to all of you on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290, TSN1290.ca, and the Boston Pizza fan line with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, 780-1290. You can also text your thoughts at 1290 and 90. Back to the Boston Pizza fan line. Rick, you're on the program. Go ahead, Rick.
A lot of angst out there.
A lot of anger.
Yeah, you know, it's like
easy.
That.
Easy now, everybody.
It's like that line from the movie Gladiator when Commodus finds out his sister's, well, in his warped mind, was betraying him, and he says, I'm vexed. I'm very vexed. You know, I'm feeling pretty vexed.
Vexed is a great word.
You know, but having vexed. Watched, I mean, I'm a huge Jet fan, but what I seen last night was, I mean, I thought the defensive zone play was just no good, as it has been for years here, and I think that out of the seven goals, I think two of them were stinky, but, I mean, it didn't even matter anymore anyways when you're losing 4-0. But there was two bad goals, there's no doubt about it. And I just wonder, like, you know, you can lose a game in a very important year for the club, especially with the rhetoric that's been here all summer, and maybe rightly so because, by all accounts, we're supposed to have a pretty talented group. But to come out and lose, you can lose 3-2 in a barn burner or whatever, 4-2 empty net goal, but to get spanked ruthlessly like that in your very first attempt, are we lying to ourselves? You know, you have a big job interview and you go to bed with a big pimple on your nose at night, so you squeeze it, you put your medicine on, and you lie to yourself all night and you say, it's not going to be there in the morning. And you go to the mirror and it's just full of pus again. Well, that's how I feel as a fan. And I wonder, What? I wonder if Paul Maurice is the guy to lead this club. Like, I like him, but I think this is his 20th year, and he's only made the playoffs 5 times, and that's how I measure winning percentage. Not how many games you win in the regular season, how many times you make the playoffs. 5 out of 20, quick West Kildonan math, that's about a 250 winning percentage.
Rick, the one thing I'll say about Paul Maurice's record, because what I hear about constantly is he's 9 or 10 win losses away from being the all-time losingest coach.
Yeah.
He's also 20 to 25 wins away from being 8th in wins.
But let me say this.
Like, then. That's just, to me, that's just a guy who keeps getting an opportunity to coach.
Well, that's fine. And I don't disagree with you. I mean, I think he's a, you know, great guy, and he might even be a good. I won't go great. He's probably a competent NHL coach, but he's not getting the job done here.
You know what? And he is a great guy, and he's a great guy to talk to. That means nothing to me. It's you're right. It's about wins and losses, so, and we're going to find out because this wasn't a great start.
But just let me say one more thing.
Yeah, sorry.
No, I don't mean to interrupt you. But I think that, you know, whatever happens in Alberta this weekend, and I think we're going to get spanked, and I hope not, but I just have a feeling we are. Now, I've always said that, you know, I thought Pomo would be gone by American Thanksgiving. I wonder if it's going to be Canadian Thanksgiving. And I think that we should put feelers out to Alberta because the only guy out here that could maybe do something here is Daryl Sutter.
All right. Rick, good luck with that acne issue that we discussed extensively here.
That's not the first time that name's popped up.
No, yeah, and you bring up the valid points. Like, we're hearing a lot
structure.
Of this.
Yeah, you want to tune the guys in a hurry?
The leeway is going to be very interesting to me, and I talked about this already. Like, what we saw last year compared to this year is going to be interesting as the season continues.
Yeah, I don't know if 10 games is...
It depends on how they lose.
A lot of games, right? Like, if theirs struggle similar.
Yeah. And I mean, like, from him with his players. Like, I'll be honest, I don't think he's going anywhere. He got an extension for multi-years. So, to me, the leeway I'm talking about is with his players. I'm wondering about...
I don't think the extension comes into play, man.
No?
If this team, if there's some level of disconnect where the team simply is not... If it's obvious that the coach... You know, when the players are tuned into a coach, the players can like a coach and just not be sharp still in, you know, whatever field or ice or court that they're on. But if you lose that connection to your players where they're giving you that level of attention to detail and dedication and carrying out what you're coaching, if you lose that, man, there's no getting that back.
Thanks for the call, Rick. We'll get another one in before we break. Neil, you're on the big show, TSN 1290. Go ahead.
Yeah, the word pus will not be used in this call.
Yes, thank you. I appreciate that.
Two quick points. In 46 games, I think we can assume that Matthias couldn't score in a house of ill repute. He can't be on our third line. He's got to be on the fourth line because he had two glorious opportunities in the first period to get us going. He didn't.
Matthias?
Yep.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, Ehlers fed him that one. Holy cow, was that a feed from Ehlers.
And a break... I was there last night, and there was a breakaway, and my wife stood up because she was excited for a breakaway, and I said, sit down. He's not going to score.
Yeah.
And second of all, I mean...
Let your wife enjoy it. That's cold.
Oh, yeah. May as well break her heart before her heart gets broken. But the second thing is, I don't know if these guys realize that points in October mean the same as they do in March. And I didn't like what I heard. I mean, I like Brian Little, but the 81 games left spiel... just annoyed the hell out of me on the post-game comments last night.
What'd you think of Maurice's comments? Because I thought he addressed it head-on, and more so than he did last year. Like, he said Trouba took a dumb penalty. Yeah, well, he didn't say Trouba. He said, we took a dumb penalty. He also said...
the leash is shorter out of the gate this year.
That's what I'm talking about, the leash in the last call with Rick. He also addressed head-on, you know, some of the things that have plagued this team. No, all of them. All the things that have plagued us were on full display last night.
I liked what I saw. I heard from him last night because for once he didn't throw himself in front of the players. He put it out there. I was impressed by his comments, but this team needs to get out to a good start or we're going to be dead by Christmas, just like last year.
That's why I'm wondering about the leash Paul's going to have with his players. We got to take a break. We'll be back with more of your calls. Thanks, Neil, and everybody else. 780-1290. More of you next on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show Podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Back on the Big Show, TSN 1290 and the Boss Pizza Fan Line, 780-1290 with Jim, Troy, and Brandon. Richard, you're on the Boss Pizza Fan Line. Go ahead, sir.
Yeah, gentlemen. It's been over talked already about we're seeing the same problems that we saw last year. My question to you is, because I really don't see them going into Alberta and winning either one of those games. I really don't see it. I watched the Calgary and Edmonton game, and I'll tell you, there's one thing I noticed that they have that we don't have, and that's toughness. And I hate to say it, I didn't see in yesterday's game any toughness, any hitting. I didn't see any team play. I saw a lot of individuals skating around, but I didn't see teamwork. And that's my biggest concern. And another concern I have is, suppose we go 1-10. Suppose we are, you know, 1 win and 10 losses. How do you make changes when you're given big contracts at millions of dollars? How can you possibly make a change? Or would you make a change? Because even the veterans, I didn't see no leadership out there. That was the most disturbing thing. I didn't see any finesse around the net. We had all these power plays, but when we get around the net, there's no finesse. We don't have finesse players like Edmonton has or Calgary has or a lot of these other teams have.
Hey, Richard, can I ask you, you might not have seen the finesse last night, but you honestly think this team doesn't have any finesse or skill on it?
I don't feel that this team can play the full 60 minutes. That's what I feel. And I've seen it last year. I don't like Edmonton. Wow. Okay, they got rid of a lot of veterans and replaced them with some pretty big guys. And you got to be tough too. I still think that part of the game is so important, but I just don't see it. Now, how do you guys feel about that?
Well, I don't think toughness had nothing to do with the Jets' struggles last night, right? If they just play sound defensively, they give themselves a chance to win the game. And when you're I agree with your no teamwork. When you're talking about, you know, being in tune with one another from a defensive standpoint, you're darn right there was no teamwork as far as things defensively related. But and the no finesse, gee whiz, the Jets have all kinds of upper echelon type players. And I thought there was finesse that was witnessed. There was 2-3 plays from Patrick Laine in just maintaining puck possession and creating space for himself that I thought were jaw-dropping. And there was some pretty good puck movement on the power play. And opportunities for the Jets to see their shooting chart, it's pretty lively. They just weren't able to solve Anderson last night.
Yeah, and you know, even the Edmonton-Calgary game, it was McDavid 3, Calgary nothing. That was the game. Edmonton didn't do a whole lot outside of the McDavid line. So, I mean, if you're looking at what Calgary did, Calgary was not very impressive at all outside of Mike Smith playing real well in his debut. But I would also point, we've heard a couple people lament the lack of physicality in the game, and especially early on. But you have to look at the pace of the game and kind of the game script and what happened. Power play after power play after power play in the first period, and you lose the ability if you wanted to get on the body and play physical. That goes out the window once you get on the power play, and it changed the way, or it didn't change the way, but it just affected how the Jets couldn't maybe, I guess, enforce their size advantage over the Maple Leafs.
And you didn't even need to. Like when you just look at the first period there, when you outshoot your opponent 17-11, you have 4 power plays during the period. So you're on the power play for 8 of the 20 minutes, and you're down 3-0 at the end of the period.
Thanks for the call, Richard. We appreciate it. To Terry on the Boss Pizza Fan Line here on the Big Show, 780-1290. Go ahead, Terry.
Morning, gentlemen. Not to beat the point that most callers have been saying, but yesterday's performance, what it left me was, how many games is it going to take me to be finally partially convinced that they have buy-in? And I don't know what that number is. You know, they could string together and win the next 6 games. And it's like there's that hockey demon in the shadows that they are one period away from pulling another one of these brutal performances that happened last night. And that was one of my key points for this team for success this year, is consistency. So I'm not that sure. You know, the way it's looking is it's probably going to take at least up until Christmas until they can string together some wins and not to have one of these performances ever again. But it's really pushed that starting point for this team, in my opinion, as far as, okay, they've changed their ways. To me, it's almost, may not be a great analogy, but, you know, if you're suffering from alcoholism, you're one drink away from dipping back into that pain. And for the Jets, it's one shift or one period away and back, they're back again. So, you know, they could go do the Western swing and win all three handily. I still won't be convinced. What I see is, you know, they're going to win two, lose one, win one, lose one, etc. And it's going to take some convincing on my part to finally have they rid themselves, for the most part, of these inconsistent hockey demons. So, anyways, I'll let you guys go so you can take on more callers. Thanks.
Fair enough, Terry. Appreciate the call. Appreciate the opinion. 780-1290 on the Boss Pete's fan line on the Big Show, TSN 1290.
When Terry talked about buy, like when are they bought in, my goodness, when you're talking about a team, like you look at their lineup last night, there were two guys that weren't part of the lineup last year, right? Kulikov and Mason. If this group isn't bought in for game one of this year and the level of importance that everyone within the organization has put on this season, when are they going to be bought in? You know?
Yeah, I mean, it's a. He brings up an interesting. I mean, it's one game, so we don't know about a streak or anything like that. But the whole. He brings up that process of last year. We rode that and rode that about how they couldn't win three in a row and stuff.
But how do. What I don't. What I'm mostly perplexed with last night, boys, is how can you not be sharp defensively last night when that is what we've heard over and over and over again from Paul Maurice? And each individual, they knew damn well that was the one thing that has haunted this group. And you have the off-season training camp, you come in and you see the level of mental errors last night. It just doesn't make sense. It's like they were mentally fatigued somehow and incapable of being sharp out on the ice.
Well, that's why I brought it up at the start of the show today. Like, I knew the fever would be around Maurice, and I knew the fever is on Twitter and some of the phone calls that he's got to go. I get where that comes from. But you're now looking at a third coach with the same core players for the same issues.
And why do you say third coach?
Because if the fans who, like I hear from, want to make a change, yeah. You're going to bring in, and he's going to try, whoever it is, to coach the same issues that this team has. And that's why I say, at what point do you not hold the players more responsible? Like, Maurice is literally talking about the same things we are, so you know he's coaching it. And fair enough, he's the coach. He bears some of the responsibility. I get that. But you bring in a third coach, it's not like he's going to reinvent the wheel. He's going to come in and say, we have to be better defensively. And we have to start with structure and stuff. Like, to me, this is inching towards, and maybe even last year I brought this up, it's some of the players. Like, the players have to bear some of this responsibility for the defensive zone play and what Terry was talking about, the buy-in. Because no matter who you bring in, He's not gonna sit here and go, no, I don't see the issues this way. These are the things we got to address.
No,
it's the same issues.
But I disagree with that, because a new coach could put into effect different schemes and systems, specifically defensive zone coverage, heal a lot of problems. But I'm right there with, like, you're talking third coach. It's what is a Scheifele, Wheeler, Little, Enstrom and Buff, and that's it? Like, when you go back...
Trouba possibly as well.
Well, Trouba was around then. Scheifele was around
then. Trouba was around for Noel?
Yeah, so was Scheifele.
Just 1 year. But I guess if you're going to look at players...
There's not much of a hangover from the Noel days, right? Like, I think it's more systematic.
And I'm not trying to blame this on the players, because they say the same thing too. We have to be better defensively. Like, we get it. I've always said, if we're talking about this with you on the phone lines and the three of us are sitting here talking about it, you know the Jets are aware of it. You know that they're coaching it. You know that they're trying to...
I tell you what, man, when you're taught, look at the penalty kill, compare it to Toronto's, and you look at the defensive zone coverage, those two things alone, that is systematic.
We got to get back to more phone calls because I want to get everybody's everybody an opportunity. 780-1290 on the Boss Pizza fan line. Keith, you're on the program. Go ahead.
One of the most difficult things to do as a coach is turn a losing team into a winning team. 99.999% of your callers have never done that. So they're commenting from ignorance. And I tell you what, it doesn't come from constant negativity. It comes from congratulating small positive changes. I was a season ticket holder back when the WHA Jets were here. And I'll tell you, the crowd was completely different than it is now. Now these are people there for entertainment. Really, no apparent knowledge of the hockey. What do you think of that?
Ooh, I give a lot more credit to the fan base of the Winnipeg Jets than that, as far as knowledge of hockey. We're talking about Canadians that love, have played, have watched and studied the game their entire lives for the most part.
I do agree with you that one of the hardest things to do is to do that. I do agree that one of the hardest things
That's
to do
Mike
within
O'Shea
an organization.
Did, right?
Well, this is what I was going to go to. And yeah. One guy that I think doesn't get enough credit for mm-hmm. doing it, because we're talking about 3 years ago, he wears shorts on the sidelines and he doesn't yell at his players enough. And he just let Nick Grigsby go, who's a very good running back, and yet they only have 3 wins. And he literally changed the culture. And it is one of the toughest things to do in sports. And I know the analytic community weighs in with me a lot of culture and the room and all this is BS. It's not.
No, it's not.
One of the toughest things to do, and you can't put a stat on it, is change the culture
Edmonton
of a losing
similar,
team.
Yeah.
But what will I'll ask you, and especially with the CFL as an example, when you want to change the culture, there's a lot of personnel movement. It's a much more difficult thing to do in the NHL.
And that's what I'm... Yeah, because of the
But it can be done, right? Yeah.
Keith, great call. Thanks for that. We appreciate the opinion. David, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead, sir.
Hey there, guys. How you doing?
Good. How are you?
Yeah, what I saw with that game was a very good Leafs third line.
Oh, yeah.
They had
230 goal scorers on that line. And our bottom six is not matching their bottom six at all. And our top two lines match up well, but those bottom six, they killed us. Whether they're killing our penalties and then putting a puck in the net. I mean, Kadri's a seasoned veteran. Marlowe's a seasoned veteran. They ate up our guys.
I'll even go further. That Connor Brown, I know he had 20 goals last year, and he's not really surprising anybody, but on the penalty kill and on a fourth line, like that's a very good hockey player.
Exactly. I mean, they talked about Maurice asking for 40 goals out of his third line, and I'm looking at Kadri with 32 last year, I think. I think he had more by himself than our whole third line. Mm-hmm. And he was for a spell there, the Leafs' top center.
Yeah, somebody did tweet me last night that the Jets' starting line combined on their third line had 39 goals last year.
Right, exactly.
And his point was Maurice wants 40 goals out of him, and this isn't the third line that was last year, but the guys on the third line last year or last night combined for 39 goals.
The Jets' third line?
Yeah.
What? Mathias, Lowry, and Armia combined for 39 goals?
That's what somebody sent me.
No, because Lowry had 15, and I think it was Lowry, Kopp, and Armia that Maurice was referring to.
Yes.
And Kopp and Armia had 9 right, yeah. each, I believe. So that would put you at 33.
Mm. Okay.
If you combine Lowry's 15.
And the third line last year was, yeah, Lowry,
So if
Armia,
that's what he
Kopp.
Was referring to, and Mathias didn't have 9 goals. So I think that's what Maurice was referring to. So basically a saw-off with Nazem Kadri as David's pointing out here.
But that's a good point.
Yeah, skilled guys on the bench. We got our more skilled guys down on the farm. We had Tanev and Dano, and these guys just can't skate with that line.
Coming into camp, David, if anyone would have said to start training camp, hey, our bottom six is going to be Kopp, Lowry, Armia, Dano, Mathias, and Tanev, people would have started booing, right?
That's right.
Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah, against that particular team, against the Leafs, you need that skilled third line to match up against Kadri and Marlowe and Komarov. You got to have somebody that can skate with them.
Yeah, and I think that gives credence to the notion of finding a way to get Perreault down to the third line.
And maybe one of the biggest games we'll have early on is tomorrow night's Moose game. And if Kyle Connor can if Connor can kind of come out of the gate strong and firing and get on the scoreboard quickly and show that he's maybe above the AHL, that gives you a lot more leeway, right? If you can put Connor up with a Scheifele and a Wheeler or whoever you want to throw him with, and but then put Perreault and Lowry and Armia together, that gives you a lot more depth and balance.
I even think, though, Wicks, that you're better off having Kopp up with Scheifele.
I'd be okay, yeah.
And Wheeler than you are sticking Perreault up there and paralyzing your bottom six like that.
Thanks for the call, David. We have to break, but we'll get to Jeremy and Chris and anyone else when we come back on The Big Show, TSN 1290.
This is The Big Show podcast on TSN 1290.ca. Catch The Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Ruwicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.
Week 5 in the NFL starts tonight, Thursday night football with the New England Patriots in Tampa Bay to take on the Buccaneers. We have it for you starting to this evening at 7 o'clock. Back to the Boss Pizza fan line, 780-1290. Jeremy, you're on the program. Go ahead.
Good morning, gents. How are you?
Good, thanks.
Fantastic. Great show again, as always. I will comment just quickly. I only watched the first period of the game last night, but I absolutely adore the passion of the Winnipeg Jets fan. Sometimes I believe the negativity is obscene, especially after game one. The over-analysis of everything that goes on is a little bit extreme. Jim, you made a comment this morning. Everybody's been making the same comment about this team defense, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. 2011, the Winnipeg Jets hired Charlie Huddy to be the assistant coach and or defensive-minded. I guess he's the coach of the defense. Is that what his deal is?
I'll do this again. I'll do this again because I'm getting this on Twitter again. We've been over this several times in my year plus here at the station. Charlie Huddy coaches individual defensemen, and he runs a system the head coach puts in place. He does not come up with the defensive system. He does not orchestrate it. He does not implement it. He coaches individual defensemen and then runs the guys who come over the boards.
Okay, fair enough. But if that's the consistent problem over and over season to season, wouldn't it be intelligent for somewhere in the Jets coaching staff to bring in maybe somebody that's just a consultant or somebody that's on the sidelines to help with that particular situation? I don't understand why they haven't done anything within the organization to attempt to become better at team defense if that's what their problem is.
That falls squarely on the shoulders of the head coach, man.
And I don't know that they haven't. Like,
well,
I know they're focused on it and they talk about it, so I assume they're working on it, but what they're specifically doing, I don't know.
You're going to go tell the head coach, hey, we're going to be bringing in name the guy to come in and solve these defensive woes. You might want to just get a new head coach.
Good, Jeremy. Okay, we got to move on to the next caller. Chris, you're on the Big Show. Go ahead.
Oh, good morning, gentlemen.
How are you?
Well, I watched the game last night, so what can I say? Just a couple of comments. First off, I do not believe that the goalie is responsible for the guy standing at the side of the net. I used to play defense, and anybody that stood at the side of my goalie's net, I covered. It's basic defense. And of the backdoor goals, as you call them, that's a defensive breakdown. That's not a goalie breakdown.
Agreed.
All right. So, and the other thing is how many rebounds do you expect the goalie to stop? That's another thing. Like
5 or 6 would be nice.
It would be nice, but I was always taught when I played that the goalie's responsible for the first shot and maybe the first rebound. After that, it's the defenseman and the forwards.
Yeah, the Kadri goal, I thought he made 3 saves before he actually scored.
The first one was damn good, yeah.
Like, I thought the goaltending last night on both sides for the first 18 minutes
was spectacular early on, huh?
Was good.
Yeah.
I think Anderson outperformed Mason because he kept our power play out of the net. He made some spectacular saves.
Yeah, he did. Anderson was unreal in my mind last night.
Yeah, he played lights out last night.
Okay, we got to go, Chris. Or, yeah, anything else? No? Okay, sorry, we appreciate opinion. Just want to squeeze in one more. Fred, you're on the Boss Pizza fan line. Can you be 30 seconds, Fred? No, Fred?
He'll be even less.
Okay, Fred, thanks. Appreciate that. We'll do it again tomorrow, of course, as we tee up the weekend as the Jets head out to Calgary, Edmonton, and Vancouver. They'll practice today at Bell MTS Iceplex at noon if you want to take that in. And, of course, Kevin Olszewski in the Don Vito Roundtable, Hustler on the Gondola Pizza warm-up, and Huss and Rick Ralph on the afternoon ride. We'll delve into this extensively as well. We appreciate you listening. For doing so, we have a couple pair of tickets to the PBR tomorrow night at Bell MTS Place. And then we have two tickets to Miranda Lambert on Saturday night at Bell MTS Place. 12th and 13th caller through 780-1290. On behalf of Troy Westwood, Brandon Rewicki, and myself, Jim Toth, we sincerely appreciate you listening. And the Big Show will be back tomorrow morning at 6 on TSN 1290.
This is the Big Show podcast on TSN1290.ca. Catch the Big Show with Jim Toth, Troy Westwood, and Brandon Rewicki. Weekdays 6 to 11 on TSN 1290.